is Jim Browdy. I am Marjorie Egan. You are listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. And you know what?
What?
It's Friday. Just
That's right.
That
How many weeks have we been here, Marjorie?
Four.
Wrong. Keep a few more.
Five.
Nope. A little more.
Okay.
How many weeks have we worked
here? It's going to be six or seven.
It has got to be six or seven. It's actually seven.
Thank you.
Congratulations
to
you. And by the way, speaking of numbers, now there are nine. That means nine candidates for mayor. And in the U.S. Senate race, three Republicans, two Dems. Three of those five are going to be voted off the island in just 18 days, which is incredible. Here to discuss both batches of candidates is longtime columnist for the Boston Herald. That would be Peter Gelsinis. Hello, Peter.
Good afternoon, folks.
Hello, How Peter Gelsinis.
Thank
so
you.
So Jim just said that we're up to nine candidates now. Are we done yet, or could we be into the double digits soon?
Well, John Barros, I think, will decide probably the first of this coming week.
Who's
Say
he?
Who he is.
Who's
John
he?
Barros is the executive director. He's a Boston School Committee member and the executive director of the Dudley Street Initiative. And he would be, if he jumps in, he would be, I think, the first Cape Verdean candidate for mayor.
So that's 10. Is there an 11? Ayanna Pressley is in the Herald today saying she's thinking about it.
Right, and there's also Yancey who continues to say that he wants to do it, but he hasn't done anything official yet.
So there are potentially 12. Is there anybody else we haven't heard about at all?
Are you counting Dorsina? And
yeah, we are.
Oh, we are?
You're up to 9 so far. So we could get to 10, 11, 12 before this thing is over.
And Charles Yancey's been a city councilor forever, and Dorsina, we assume, is related to
it's her brother.
Linda Dorsina.
It's her brother.
Ford.
Even though they're estranged from what I read in the
Who's
Dorchester
running
Reporter.
For the...
He says he's running for mayor, right?
Yeah, okay.
Right.
And she's a state representative.
Hey, Peter,
state representative.
One of our coworkers, Edgar, was asking upstairs, you know, there's so many of these city council people, they all have to give up their seats.
Right.
If they don't, by the signature collection deadline, obviously they can pull out of the mayoral race and go back and run for their old seat. When is that roughly? Do you have any idea when that is?
I should know, but...
But they can do that. They can declare, they can run for a while, and if it doesn't work out, that they can drop back into their own race.
I think that's correct. I think that's correct.
Okay, let's go through if we can. There are four who entered the field this race. Consalvo, Ross, Walsh, and Arroyo. Let's play a little sound from each of them, and then maybe you can handicap for us what you think their chances are. First, Rob Consalvo.
What differentiates me is my vision and my record as a city councilor in bringing new ideas, new energy, and new public policy initiatives to the city council.
So what are the pluses and minuses? I assume the pluses, he's reportedly very close to Tom Menino, right?
He was affectionately known as Tom's mini-me.
He does make jokes about his own size, in fairness, so people aren't angry at you, by the way.
But the idea of how close he is, because Tom, the mayor, and his father were very, very close.
He's a player in this? Is Consalvo a player in this race?
Well, I think he's going to have – I think the problem there is that his base is also sort of the comfortable base for both Dan Conley and John Conley, that whole West Roxbury, J.P. Hyde Park area. They all come from the same area. And as I was writing today and as I was told yesterday, you know – There are two races here. There's the preliminary, which is a totally different animal in a sense from the final, and the geometry of that is much different in the sense that, you know, the more people who are going to jump into this, theoretically, the lower the threshold. So you may need
to make it into the final two
exactly.
for the runoff.
So it could be 10, 12, however many people are running for these two final positions.
That's correct. And and you could have, you know, the kind of yardstick or threshold that's been thrown out there is 20,000. But theoretically, it could be less than that.
20,000 votes to make it into the final two. But at rate, the more candidates, the lower the threshold.
Theoretically, yeah.
Okay, so Michael Ross sort of entered yesterday. He's the former city council president. I think he tweeted out or put out a statement. He's going to have an event sometime soon. Here's Michael Ross yesterday.
I'm running. I love this city. I believe in its people, and I have a vision for its future.
He has a vision for its future, too. So what's the Michael Ross deal, Peter Gelsinis? Why are you laughing?
I won't tell you the names, but a gentleman told me yesterday that he was talking to another gentleman who were both, you know, fairly well-known in political circles. And they, one guy said, you know, I like Ross because he's a hipper, thinner Menino. doesn't have the foibles with speech. I think, you know, what he told me, it was funny, what Mike told me a couple of weeks back was that he was confident that in this race, the fact that there's going to be, you know, a great deal of attention paid to an open race for mayor that really hasn't happened for 30 years, that he expects those sort of dead zone areas in most municipal elections, South End, Beacon Hill, Back Bay.
Which is his area,
right? Which historically is a very low turnout to come out, you know, to get into this because there'll be a lot of publicity, et cetera, about the mayor's race. So, you know, he was, when I first talked to him, he was saying he was, you know, seriously considering it. So I think he's decided that, you know, he should be able to draw there, you know, better than anybody else.
You know, why are the Back Bay and South End and Beacon Hill such bad voters, those neighbors? Because those are the high-end rent districts and the multi-million dollar condo
districts. Right, but you have a lot of people that are either you know, connected to schools or they're not really from here. And they get up for, you know, a presidential race or a high profile Senate race, but the you know, the nitty gritty of the city stuff doesn't seem to light their fire.
You know, people don't like talking about identity politics, but let me do it anyway. Mike Ross would be the only Jewish candidate in the race. He's already got a couple $100,000. His father is a very well-known Holocaust survivor.
Right.
His mother has been in a lesbian relationship for, what, like 30 years now that he's taught. I mean, he really touches a lot of the constituency.
You're leaving something out.
What else?
Well.
Oh, he's a really good-looking young guy.
Exactly.
I mean, obviously. Yeah. I mean, it's not insignificant. I'm glad you said that, Marjorie, rather than me.
I'm always there to point those things out, Jim.
Let's go to the third guy who entered this race. He's a state rep, and his name is Marty Walsh.
It's hard to define what type of mayor I'm going to be. I know this. I'm certainly going to be accessible, both in my campaign and as mayor of Boston.
Marty Walsh, what do you think about him? I mean, a lot of people think he's the front runner.
You know, I did not know this until earlier this week, but a friend of his, a very close friend of his, said that Walsh was a cancer survivor as a child.
I didn't know that.
And I assume that that's going to come out.
And his parents are both from Ireland, so
he's leaving the connection he had with the building trades, the union situation. He's beloved in and around Savin Hill and certain parts of Dorchester. But you know, the other thing, I mean, this is kind of more under the radar, but Bill Walczak, who Codman Square area is also lives in Savin Hill. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see that dynamic,
a great geographical breakdown in your piece this morning. That's what you were talking about, that, you know, the people, you know, the Charles Yancey and Barrows, the Dudley Street Initiative, you know, Yancey could be, I guess Yancey would be Mattapan, actually.
Right, exactly.
But Barrows, Dudley Street, you know, John Conley, Consalvo, you know, the Hyde Park, West Roxbury thing.
Right.
And it's neighborhood by neighborhood. So
the preliminary is your point, because
the feeling is, guys I talked to yesterday, today is, you know, in a preliminary, the rule of thumb is you define your base, you work your base, you massage your base, and you kind of try to expand it. But the focus of your concentration, I mean, obviously these people are going to have to try to canvass the city. But the other thing I was told, too, is look for state reps, other state reps and city councilors not involved in this to be key to some of these people. I was told that, for instance, state rep or Senator Petrocelli in East Boston is going to do a lot of work for Consalvo in East Boston. And he needs that. You know, it's the other end of the city. It's not a place where, you know, he would normally be looking for votes. I mean, he's a district councilor, so, you know, his base is in the southwest part of the city.
And then go ahead, John.
No, go right ahead.
I was going to ask about Felix Arroyo.
We have a little clip
of him at his announcement this week. Felix Arroyo.
My name is Felix Arroyo. I have a decade of experience as an organizer and as a public servant right here in the city of Boston. And I'm happy to announce today that I will be a candidate for mayor.
And of course, he's got presumably some of the Latino vote, if not a big chunk of it.
I was going to do we had an interview, Felix and I had an interview after that, but it got kind of edged out for something else I had to do. But he told me this great story the other day. He said that when his father, Felix D., I believe, Arroyo, you know, he went to work for Ray Flynn as his personnel director. So Felix was 4 years old when Ray got elected, the last sort of race that kind of mirrors this. And so he was about 11 or 12, and he was going to meet his dad at the city hall office, you know, to go home. But father wasn't in the office at the time, so he starts wandering around city hall, and he wanders in to the corner office, and Ray's there, and Ray says, "Felix, you know, come on in here, you know." So Felix tells me, you know, he said, "I'm in there. I'm looking around at the ceilings. I'm looking out that big wall of glass, looks out over Quincy Market, and I'm just, you know, I'm in heaven." And Ray says, "So what do you want to be when you grow up, Felix?" And he looks at Ray, and he looks around, and he says, "I think I want to be mayor."
How old was he at this point?
He was about 11 or 12, maybe younger. And Ray says, "So you want to be boss of the city, huh?" He goes, "No, I want to be boss of my dad."
That's a pretty good story.
Wow. That's pretty good.
So everybody, the line, I know it's tired already. It's a majority minority city. And while the people, Will Dorsina, Clemens, they're people of color, in terms of high profile people.
A lot of people, and I'm talking about pretty dispassionate, cynical people, are saying at this point, unless other, you know, minority candidates jump in, that they're giving Felix one of the finals.
One of the two finals. He's also got a very big personality, by the way.
He's here a couple of weeks ago. First of all, he's tireless.
Yeah. Tireless.
And he has connections. He has some roots in Southie I know about. And he's all over the city. And I think, you know, he's made it, you know, I think he distinguished himself, you know, I mean, the energy level he has is a lot different than what his dad had. Mm-hmm. And he established that very quickly. And plus, when I first met him, you know, a dozen years ago or more, it was because of an SEIU thing. You know, he was the
political director for SEIU.
And he was the an organizer, and he was rallying these people who were fighting, the Janets who were fighting, a situation at the Tip O'Neill building.
Hey, so Peter, if this, I know it's a secret ballot and he's probably not going to do it. Who's Tom Anino? If this is the field, who's he vote for on election day?
Well, I think if it's a sentimental thing and how he feels about his father, et cetera, you'd have to say Consalvo. But, you know, he could, I don't know, you know, I see him thinking that, I mean, depending on, you know, I mean, we're talking about the preliminary situation. I mean, the final would be a different situation as well.
You know? But you know one thing about Arroyo, of course, his father, you mentioned his father, Felix, whatever his middle initial is, was also a city councilor. And he was always a character. I mean, he was one of the few people, one of the few politicians that was so opposed to the Iraq War. And, of course, he turned out to be right. Remember, he went on a hunger strike.
Right, but then
the war lagged on for so long that Felix could only, I think he was only fasting, it got to be one day a month
That's one of the differences. Felix was like the city council of the world, father, and the son is rooted in the bowels of the city. I mean, the son was one of the players, turned out to be, and I mean, it was first term. He turned out to be a key player in that whole firefighters Menino Union battle there.
Oh, as was Michael Ross.
As was Ross, too.
Okay, can we switch to the Senate race just for a couple of minutes? I was saying to Marjorie upstairs, only 18 days to go till a primary for a seat that has not been open for 30 years. It's amazing how this is sneaking up and how low profile it is. Here is Gabriel Gomez at the debate the other night over at WBZ. Listen up.
This is an example of what you have when you've got people who have been in politics for a good part of their life bickering back and forth about government policies here.
Let me reject conventional wisdom just for a second, Peter, and say that while the conventional wisdom is that Michael Sullivan is the candidate to beat, I'd argue that there's enough objective evidence to suggest that Gomez is the one to beat. And let me tell you why. One, he's got the most money. He's the wealthiest guy. Mm. Two, he's got the most ads. Three, he says he has an internal poll in which he's tied with Sullivan. Everybody says poo-poos that. But Michael Sullivan puts out his one and only television ad so far. Who does it attack for 20 of the 30 seconds? Gabriel Gomez. Good-looking, young, Navy SEAL. That's the end of my pitch. He could win this thing, could he not?
Yeah, I mean, theoretically.
You don't think so?
No, I mean,
You think it's Sullivan?
Yeah, I think so. Or, you know, again, I don't know. I mean, I think Winslow is the guy. I mean, it's, you know, from what I've seen, he's the guy that seems to make the most sense.
He's the best debater by far.
He's been the best in all the debates.
I mean, you know, but again, you're right. I mean, you know, there are other vibes that take hold here. So, but I don't, I, I'm, I'm, personally, I'm not all that impressed by what I've seen of him, of Gomez.
Which one? Well, I'm not talking about it being impressed or not impressed. I mean, if you watch debates, here's Dan Winslow the other night pressing Michael Sullivan about how he would vote on the gun compromise between Senator Toomey, the guy from Pennsylvania, and Senator Manchin, the one from West Virginia. Here it is.
I would vote yes for the compromise, and you would vote?
But it doesn't
And you would
address,
vote?
It doesn't
Let
address,
him answer, please.
It doesn't address the problem, is the point I'm trying to make here.
He asked him about 18 times. He said,
Sullivan,
and you would vote, and you won?
Sullivan has zero chance in the general election, it would seem to
me. Why do you say that?
Because he's far too conservative. He's not the kind of Republican that gets elected in Massachusetts. Mm. He's pro-life. He's pro-gun. I mean, where is he on gay marriage? I don't think he's pro-gay marriage, is he? I just don't see that Sullivan, I could be wrong about
right.
that, but I think he
I
is.
Think you are, I think you are.
Right. Yeah, he's a social conservative. Not a good thing for Massachusetts. By the way, the conventional wisdom, of course, is that Ed Markey, the congressman, has got this sewn up, too, against Stephen Lynch, the congressman. Do you buy that, or do you think that there could be an upset? Stephen Lynch is your neighbor there in South Boston, Peter Gelsenis.
I know.
Fighting for a parking space every night.
No, that's true. That's true. We all are. it's our lot in life now.
It's vicious. Dog eat dog.
You know, there's something. I think part of this thing comes down to, I mean, when I was watching the debate the other night, they were live streaming it, and it just occurred to me that, you know, I mean, in the end, it's all about, you know, who can sell the best kind of small story of my upbringing, you know? I mean,
I'm wait a second. Have you never heard your colleague Marjorie Egan say that every Democrat who's run for office in the last 50 years in the state grew up in a three-decker,
right, exactly.
and their mother was a washerwoman?
That's right.
That's
exactly.
right. That's right. And that's it seems to me, no matter what they say about the issues, that's the most important thing. I mean, that's how they ended the debate. The other night.
Well, and, you know, for those who didn't hear that, by the way, while Lynch is clearly up until that point won the sort of man of the people
strapped
thing.
On the work
Markey
boots.
Told this beautiful story about going back to the three-decker where his family had grown up. He knocks on the door three years ago.
I'd heard that several times before.
Well, I'd never heard it. It was great. Yeah, and he says a Dominican
true,
family,
right,
just
right.
like his family. I thought it was actually quite beautiful.
No, he told that. They had a candidates forum at SEIU a few weeks back, and that's how he ended that. You know, he ended that the same way with that story.
A couple of wags in the newsroom said when he said, I visited this house where I grew up, I visited 3 years ago, said that Lynch should have interrupted him and said, and that was the last time you were in Massachusetts, too.
Well, who was the one? It was Scott Brown. Didn't he make a crack about seeing people on the airplane coming back from Washington,
Yeah, where did
D.C.?
He make that crack, Marjorie?
He made that on a previous radio show.
Yes, he did.
And then, you know, there's something about, I think there's something about, you know, Markey's kind of general appearance and demeanor that kind of screams, you know, sort
Just
of being
it.
Hatched in Congress, you know, being hatched in these sort of granite corridors, you know? I mean, he just has that, you know, sort of like he's hermetically sealed. I mean, it's, you know, he keeps sort of referring back to, there's all that stuff about, you know, Senator Chevy Chase and all of that, but
where he lives.
Yeah, but
I thought he came off as much more of a real person the other night in the BZ thing. Yeah,
oh, I thought
pardon, not the BZ.
The other thing that,
in the BostonHerald.com
Boston
thing.
The other
thing,
said,
the
other Matt, thing that, please, Matt, but, please,
but
Jacqueline.
He does,
her name is,
you know,
Jacqueline, not Jacqueline.
He does have that weird halting cadence when he talks sometimes. You know,
he sounds like John Kerry.
Yeah, or like I said, he sounds like a couple of those supporting characters
and
in Lincoln. Louisburg
Square.
You know?
He does. You're right. He sounds like he should have been in the movie Lincoln.
You know, he was in a movie. Have you ever seen the movie Gods and Generals?
No, I have not.
Ed Markey is in that.
Okay, fine.
As
we'll
a British officer.
Is he a god or a general?
And he looks terrific in the British
uniform.
He's
very handsome.
He really
does.
Okay, on that note, Peter Gelsenis. It's been a pleasure as always.
Thank you.
Peter Gelsenis, crack columnist for the Boston Herald. Great to see you, Peter.
Thank you very much, Peter, for coming in. Okay, up next, Callie Crossley joins us to go over some of the big stories that did not get headline treatment this week. Stay tuned for Callie on 89.7 WGBH.
This week, a lengthy profile of Anthony Weiner and his wife in the New York Times let the world know that Weiner's back. Well, it's better than Weiner's front. I'm Peter Sagal. We've given up on returning to polite society. On this week's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the news quiz from NPR.
Tomorrow afternoon at 1, here on 89.7 WGBH.
This program is on WGBH thanks to you. And the Boston Speaker Series, presented by Lesley University. The series returns to Symphony Hall next season for 7 evenings. More information available at bostonspeakerseries.org. That's bostonspeakerseries.org. And live from Lincoln Center, from opera to pop to everything in between, join Josh Groban for a special concert of his career-spanning favorites. Don't miss Josh Groban, All That Echoes, Friday at 9 on WGBH2.
You're listening to Boston Public Radio. I am Jim Browder. She is Marjorie Egan. You hear her, not Marjorie, this woman, every Sunday night at 6:30 on Under the Radar with Callie Crossley, and every Friday with us. Today's time together, we're going to focus on a controversial song and a controversial trip by two people who make songs. Good to see you, Callie Crossley.
Good to see you. It's so glad to have this time together.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Has it been as good for you, Callie,
been for She'll let you know in 15 minutes,
okay.
Marjorie.
Okay. Well, there's this big brouhaha and uproar over this particular song called Accidental Racist. Let's hear a little piece of it now.
Dear Mr. White Man, I wish you understood what the world is really like when you're living in the hood. Just because my pants are sagging doesn't mean I'm up to no good. You should try to get to know me. I really wish you would. Now my chains are gold, but I'm still misunderstood. I wasn't there when Sherman's march turned the South into firewood. I want you to get paid, but be a slave, I never could. Feel like a newfangled jangle dodging invisible white hoods. So when I see that white cowboy hat, I'm thinking it's not all good. I guess we're both guilty of judging the cover, not the book. I'd love to buy you a beer.
LL Cool J and Brad Paisley. This thing that they say they want to start a great debate about race in America, and the basic theme in everybody is sort of let bygones be bygones and let's move on. What's your take on this thing?
Well, you know, I thought it was kind of interesting. I've been fascinated by some of the comments that said they're both guilty of lame lyrics more than anything
else.
Don't
you think that's true? Well, gold chain and iron chains? Yeah. I mean, hello?
Yeah, it is. But as always, Ta-Nehisi Coates from The Atlantic, the fabulous analyst, has taken this to another level to really talk about it in a way that I think is appropriate. And that is, he says, you know, he wrote a piece of why accidental racist is actually just racist. And he said the bottom line is that black people are different, which seems to be a concept that a lot of people don't get. And he criticized Brad Paisley for not reaching out to folks who actually talk about these issues, like, you know, who are rappers, like the Talib Kweli's, like the Mos Defs, you know, Big Daddy Kane, Chuck D. These are people who have invested a lifetime of talking about issues across race and intra-racial issues. So these are the folks that you go to that you wouldn't end up with lame lyrics. He said, LL Cool J, love his stuff, but this is not the guy. You know, he wasn't the one you'd go to. So in his mind, Brad just reached out to LL because he happened to be the black rapper he knew. And, you know, good for the effort, but it undermines, what his overall point was.
Isn't there one good thing about this, though? We are always going to have the big conversation about race. We were going to have it after, you know, the O.J. Simpson trial. Then we're going to have it, you know, when Barack Obama became the president. We never have the conversation about race in the white world and the black world together. We never do it because everybody kind of forgets about it or something like that. So at least people are talking about those issues.
I maintain, they're not. They're not? This is sort of like, to your point, actually, it's like a little spike of interest because it's a little controversy, but there is no conversation.
Yeah.
You know, this is sort of highlighting some lame lyrics, as we've said. We can talk about Brad Paisley's overarching, you know, wish to do something, which, you know, I applaud, but, you know, it's weird. I mean, here's a line from the song. If you don't judge my do-rag, I won't judge your red flag.
That's one of the most beautiful things ever. It's so moving.
Really?
Yeah.
And I got to just quote this from Ta-Nehisi's column, which I think is right to the point. The only reason to call up LL is that he is black and thus must have something insightful to say about the Confederate flag. The assumption that there is no real difference among black people is exactly what racism is. Our differences, our right to our individuality is what makes us human. So, I mean, you know, look, anything that would draw people in to have a real conversation, I'm okay with. This just seems weird.
It's also like a nano thing. You know, my initial impression was exactly what you said, Marjorie. And then you say, this is like a two-day wonder kind of thing. Yeah. Everybody gets a shot at this thing, whether it's on The View or here or wherever it is, and you move on. But talk about never having this debate. We have a president who is black. We have a governor who's the second black governor in American history. Both men go out of their way. We've had this discussion with Deval Patel. Go out of their way not to talk about being black, which makes it very difficult to help generate a conversation about race in America.
I would argue that, you know, it's really not incumbent upon them to have the conversation. It's where I draw the line is it is incumbent upon them when things happen on their watch and they have to respond to it.
Right.
Skip Gates happens on your watch, Governor Patrick. I expect you to comment on it within the full context of the situation, which includes race.
But
Wait a minute. Yeah. Trayvon Martin happens on your watch, President Obama. I expect you to comment within the full context.
And his comment was that could have been my kid.
Right. What did Deval Patrick say about Skip Gates? I don't remember.
I don't remember anything.
Well, because he didn't say anything.
Barack Obama made the comment about racism. I mean, then ultimately he had the beer summit there, sort of a retraction, and not a literal, but a figure of retraction.
But I want to give them both this point, and then you can jump on me. Yeah. And that is, it's incumbent on the rest of us. I mean, I'm happy for them to enter into the discussion, and even if they want to occasionally to lead it. But it's not their total responsibility. It really isn't. It's the rest of us to figure out ways, lame lyrics or not, to engage other people in this conversation. And a conversation is something that is ongoing. It's not today. We talk about it on the water cooler and then tomorrow, oh, well, something different's come up. It really is. This is in the very fabric of our being here in America. And we gotta talk about it with each other one-on-one.
I hate to be, what was the line, a nittering nabob of negativity? Is that what Spiro Agnew said?
Nattering
nabob. Thank you. It was close enough. Yeah. But we're never going to have the conversation. We're never going to have the conversation. The reality is almost every, Marjorie mentioned a couple of these incredible moments, but the moments you have are so short-lived in this society, in part because people are wildly uncomfortable, and human nature is to avoid things that are uncomfortable. And secondly, the way you preempt, not you, one preempts a conversation and says, wait a second, Barack Obama's a black guy. Wait a second, Deval Patrick's a black guy. We're past that. We're in a post-racial era.
Yeah, but so we're not. I'm not
saying we are. I'm just saying we never have the conversation.
Well, I just say if you're going to say that from a societal, a total societal, we're never having a conversation. At this point, that's correct. But there are conversations happening. And that is what is important here.
By the way, we should correct something. I said, or at least one of us said, that Deval Patrick had nothing to say about Gates. Our producers, a little smarter than we are, said he was, quote, very troubled by the arrest of Skip Gates and was, quote, every black man's nightmare. And he spoke a week after having
right. So that was on his watch. So he commented within the context. But to you know, for him to come out this week and say, let me tell you about accidental racist seems because I want to make sure that I'm leading on the conversation about race is ridiculous. It's for the rest of us to understand
this up. I think I've said this to you before, but one of the things I love about Basic Black that is on every Friday night at 7:30 is that I obviously am a white person. I feel a little bit.
In case anybody was doubting that issue, thank you for the clarification.
I mean, obviously you guys are on TV, but you feel almost like you are a white person spying on four black people talking as they would talk among themselves if there were no white people in the room. Because black people talk different when they're alone, and white people talk different when they're alone. And when it's a black and white mix, it's a different conversation. So I always find that very, very fascinating.
And we strive to be insightful because that is exactly what's happening there. We're in a conversation about some things. And, you know, it's not always as it's perceived by, you know, folks on the outside. So it's a good way to get inside, if you will.
And it's a very different perspective than I might have thought you guys would take going into the show. So big plug for Basic Black.
I have to be honest here. I don't want to offend you, Kelly. As well, Marjorie is praising
Basic
Black.
What, you think I'm not black?
No, I have to say, I thought Marjorie was. That's
okay.
Where I'm
going.
But I have to say, through the years, I've said to myself, the only person who really understands the black condition, Brad Paisley. That's a position that I have taken through the years,
right.
And it's about time. Speaking of performers, who I have a little bit more respect for than the two guys we've talked about, Jay-Z and Beyonce go to Cuba to celebrate their fifth anniversary. They get savaged from the right by a couple of congresspeople from Florida for saying, why are you there? You're not permitted to be there. They get savaged from the left saying there are all these human rights violations in Cuba and you're partying and having this celebration and all the Cubans are thrilled. Where'd you fall in this thing?
Well, when I first heard it, I have to say somebody's getting fired if they didn't get them the license to go, because people need to understand you have to have a license.
Have you been to Cuba?
What were you doing there? On an artist's license, and it was great. An arts license. It was a group that was going to go, didn't go. I mean, this is how measured these things are. You just can't willy-nilly go. You have to be under. So when the group didn't go, My group was able to take it over, and we were able to travel there. It was fantastic.
How long ago was that?
About 5-6 years ago, because I wanted to go under while Fidel Castro was still hanging on.
To Jay-Z and Beyonce, what was it like for you? What was it like there?
It was incredible.
How so?
You know, because it at every corner, somebody is playing music that's of CD quality. There is so much rich culture there. It's overwhelming. The senses are just assaulted with the cultural richness that is there. And it's a poor country. And it was really interesting to be. I had not been in a communist country before where, you know, you realize, oh, this is what this means. They don't have something in this size, or they don't have something. That's the end of that.
And how was the accommodation? I often wondered.
Oh,
do they
fabulous.
Have nice?
Oh,
they do have nice hotels.
Oh, Fidel's thing is he wants people to visit there.
Okay.
So in the area of Havana specifically, which has been rebuilt by him specifically to draw people because he's a businessman into Cuba to spend money or to come travel under these licenses. They want your money there. It's gorgeous.
Very
now,
snazzy.
The Cubans cannot go into those hotels. They are forbidden from going into hotels that are there for tourists.
Any Cuban?
No, they cannot, unless they're working there.
So how'd you feel about that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I mean, it's the communist country. You know, you go to experience what that's all about. And when I say you have a license and it's very formally directed, I mean that we had to follow the program that was set up by this other group. So there was no diverting from the program like today. Oh, I don't think I feel like going to talk to those people. No. You have to stick on the schedule because that's how it is. No, because we have no relationship with them, this is an interesting thing. If you run out of money there, there's no bank machine. Fortunately, I was traveling with someone from India, and she was able to use the bank machine.
Why is there no bank
machine?
Well,
we have no relationship with them.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
So, of course. Yeah.
So let's get back briefly to Jay-Z and Beyonce. What was your take? Again, the left attacked him, the right attacked him. What did you think of the
film? I thought it's odd that so many other artists have been there. The Sean Penns, the Bill Murrays have been there. No comment from these people. But when Jay-Z and Beyonce go, somehow it's very, very offensive. The other thought is these are internationally, globally recognized cultural assets to this country, whether or not you like their music or not, that's who they are.
Yeah.
And so for them to travel on a license that is a cultural exchange is absolutely appropriate. Now, can they enjoy themselves while they're there? Of course they can. And I'm telling you, the arts there are so rich. Now, you know that Jay-Z has written a song.
I'm about to read from it. Here's it is. Boy from the hood, but got White House clearance. Obama said, chill, you're going to get me impeached. We don't need this expletive deleted anyway. Chill with me on the beach.
Here's my favorite line. They want to give me jail time and a fine. Fine, let me commit a real crime.
But the White House is saying Obama had nothing to do with it.
No, he didn't. Of course, you go through the U.S. Treasury. That's where everybody has to go. I mean, I just thought this was a great song. I love the repeat, y'all got to learn today. Little rap.
Why'd they go?
Well, as an artist, Cuba is a fabulous place.
For the artistic.
I'm telling you.
Okay.
I mean, and as both of them being singers, I can only, this is Buena Vista Social Club. You remember the movie about them? I cannot explain to you how rich it is, how fabulous it is.
How are the beaches?
Fabulous.
I bet.
It's a poor country. We were there over the end of the month, and I had a really interesting experience where a woman came up to me and she started rubbing her hand, because I don't speak Spanish, and looking at me and rubbing her hand. So I thought she's saying, you're brown, I'm brown. We have a connection. And then I realized, no, she was looking for soap because it was the end of the month. Mm-hmm. They run out of stuff. And we, of course, my group knew this. We traveled with drugs. We traveled with soap. We traveled with a lot of stuff that, they wouldn't have access to and gave it out freely as we could. Went to an artist school, where kids are learning to be artists and, took supplies. If people want to see what communism looks like.
To run out of soap.
Yeah, at the end of the month.
You know what I think? Whatever I think of Cuba, by the way, you talk about the lack of liberty and all the downsides of Castro being there forever, I'll never forget the image in the Michael Moore film, Sicko, when this is pre-Obamacare, when he's leading a bunch of people. Were they veterans? I can't remember. A bunch of people who were ill and couldn't get medical care. And he's in a little boat outside Guantanamo asking to be let in so these people can get free medical care. Yeah, in any case, what are you doing 6:30 on Sunday?
Well, one of our stories is about Copa Airlines, a Panama-based airline that is now going to be have a spot here in Boston at Logan Airport beginning July 10th. All kinds of flights into Central and South America. This is the fruit, I believe, of Governor Patrick's work of going down to those countries to establish business links. I mean, you know, he's been to Colombia, he's been to Brazil. There is a lot of business to be had in this area and connected there. And so now people can go.
I read this I found impossible to believe. This is the first direct flight from Boston to Latin America. We're the only major American city that does not have a direct flight nonstop prior to this.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Well, you see, you got to go, you know, so when people were criticizing him for going to establish the business, I mean, it does pay off. I think, you know, we'll have people from the surrounding areas, the states, trying to come here to fly out of there. And there, and by the way, you can go to most of those countries without having to have a license to go.
That's good. So, you been to Panama?
I have not, but this is a direct flight. Makes it very interesting.
All right. Callie Crossey is on every Sunday at 6:30 on WGBH Radio on 89.7 with her Under the Radar stories. That's a great one. You know, when you say the only flight to Latin America, that obviously includes all of South America.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Wow. So that's the gateway to all those other cities. I mean, you just can have a ball.
Callie Crossey, thank you very much for coming in to speak with us. I hope it was good for you. Was it good for you, Callie? Do we
It was exciting. Okay. It was exciting. It was accidentally exciting, I think.
Thank you.
Okay.
We all know that nothing is certain except death and taxes. So, are people cheating on their taxes? Is it a given? Are you a tax cheat? That conversation is next on Boston Public Radio.
You're listening to Boston Public Radio. I am Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan. It's tax time, everybody. Federal tax returns are due on Monday. The state tax return, if you're from Massachusetts, is postponed today to Tuesday because of Patriots Day. Sadly, Marjorie and I are not equipped with last-minute tips on how to reduce your liability, but rather we will talk about how many Americans reduce their own liability by cheating on their taxes. And we want to know at 877-301-8970. It's nail-biting time. We know you're preparing for Monday's filing. Have you ever cheated? And by the way, we will not trace any calls. If you haven't, is it because of reasons of morality? You're a law-abiding soul. And if you have, how do you justify your law-breaking, tax-avoiding ways? 877-301-8970 is our number. Our email is BPR, as in Boston Public Radio, BPR at WGBH.org. Do you have some of the numbers on people who admit that they cheat on their taxes? Do you have that in front of
you? Well, I think it depends on who's asking whether you cheat on your taxes or not. We have this survey that is done that's connected with the IRS, and it's not any great surprise that in that survey, 87% say it is never okay to cheat on your taxes. And most of those people say it's their own personal integrity that keeps them honest, although 63% do say they fear an audit. And this is what I really find incredible. But again, this is a survey that's connected with the IRS. Nearly two-thirds of those people in that particular survey thinks the IRS needs a bigger budget. I mean, I find this very hard to believe.
Well, bigger budget because they don't want the cheaters to get away with cheating, right?
I don't believe these people for a second. I mean, here's the question, Jim Browdy. If you picked up the phone at home, hello? Who's this? This is a survey being done by the Internal Revenue Service.
Are you going to cheat on your taxes this year?
You are cheating on your taxes. Who in the world is going to say yes? A survey done by somebody else, and I don't think anybody's going to admit they're cheating on their taxes, even if they were cheating on their taxes.
Well, actually, some small number do.
Some small number do, and many more people admit cheating on their taxes when they're not asked by a government survey that's related to the IRS. In this survey done by somebody called DDB Worldwide, In 2011, 15% of those people surveyed admitted They do cheat on their taxes. Most of them are men, a third of them are single, and most of them are under age 45 years old.
And by the way, one of those questions, they said they cheated, quote, as much as possible.
That's right.
And the numbers are going up because the economy is getting bad. People are angry with government spending, their own economic situation, or all that sort of thing. So we want to know, and again, no tracing, no background checks on any of you people. 877-301-8970. Have you ever cheated? And if you have, or you contemplate it, what's the mindset? You know, I am of the belief, and by the way, I am not one who believes that we are a society of cheaters and lawbreakers and all that kind of thing, but people are so economically strapped, and most people, even liberals who like big government, think government is out of control in some fashion. I would say if people had sodium pentothal applied or administered, I would bet somewhere in the 30 or 40% range would say, if I was certain that I would not get caught, I wouldn't do, quote, as much as possible, but I'd do some cheating on the margins. 877-301-8970, again, and BPR at WGBH.org. Do you do it? Would you do it? And most importantly, I guess even more importantly than if you do, if you don't do it, is it because you're a moral, law-abiding soul, or is it just because you're worried you're going to get caught?
And I think it's also very interesting to find out who it is that does the most cheating. Now, you might guess that those who are libertarians do the most cheating because they think the government should be spending all this money. They don't want to have a Department of Education. They don't want to have a Department of Early Childhood Education. They want government to be tiny, tiny, tiny. So they think the government is ripping me off at every turn. I'm going to try to cheat if I can. I think lots of people think it's different. You know, I think the classic example is if you go into CVS and you give the cashier $20 and she gives you back too much money because it's a person-to-person interchange and you figure you're not rolling in dough if you're working at CVS, you say, hey, miss or boy.
Because you're worried it's going to come out of their pocket.
You gave me too much money. I'll give it back. You don't want to cheat that person.
I agree.
But when it's the big faceless government that you think has got you coming and going and they're shafting you and you're paying parking tickets and you're having to pay to register your car, you have to stand in line for 4 hours at the RMV even though that's the state and you, maybe you're a conscientious objector. You don't like all these wars. You don't like that your taxes are going to Iraq and Afghanistan. I think people would cheat all day long if they didn't think they'd get caught. And by the way, this says, was it 1%
or 2%?
I know you're
going to go, the percentage of people who are audited is so unbelievable.
It's tiny, 1 or 2%. So the odds are overwhelmingly on your side. The question is, do you want to take a risk and have your neighbors know? And it's also interesting if you think that other people cheat. You know, if you look around your office,
You know
seven
who all the cheaters are.
Do you think you know who the cheaters are?
I could name them. 877-301-8970. And also, you know, you're factoring in this huge part of your rationale, not for you personally, but you think for the cheaters' rationale.
Not for me
rationale.
Personally, I would never cheat.
No, I understand that.
Absolutely
it's for the cheaters' rationale. Is that big government's wasting my money and
they
all
are.
Sorts of, but when you're economically strapped, again, I'm not advocating this, you're looking for every place to save money, and you say to yourself, how are they going to know? If I add an extra deduction, how are they going to know
now,
if I...
What? Some people, some that I know quite well, have boxes of receipts that are about 2.5 feet high.
Yeah. Can I tell you something? Before I knew you were going to do this. And before,
I'm a little suspicious.
Okay, I'm going to tell you. We're going to get to the calls
receipts.
In a sec. I'm going to say this right now because I really... This is one of these areas where I prefer not to be tainted by your allegations.
Okay.
I have been audited twice in my life.
Really?
In fact, I was audited
I
by the IRS
were.
2 years in a row. Do you know what no change means, Marjorie? It means after they audit you, which, by the way, is one of the single most torturous
Why do you think you
experiences.
Were
because I had a lot of deductions because I was traveling a lot. I was a union president at the time.
Oh, okay.
I was traveling all over the country, a lot of business expenses.
I thought because you annoyed people here.
Maybe
the,
I did. But no, it was prior to my media career, such as it is. What I started to say was, both times, as rigorous as the audit is, and it is a nightmare of unparalleled proportions, both times the IRS inspector, or whatever they're called, concluded no change, meaning I had done everything right, despite your frightening allegations. Let's start with Don in Boston. We're talking about tax time. It's Monday, and whether you're a cheater, and if you are, why, and if you're not, why not. Hi, Don.
Hi there. I've listened to you guys for a long time. Glad to finally get on with you.
We're glad to have you.
Thank you for calling.
The first and foremost, I wouldn't cheat, but reason I wouldn't do so, besides being a new citizen to this country, is all said and done, if the IRS audits you, like you were just saying, it is the most brutal thing I've ever seen or seen
brutal.
My friends go. And I've had two friends who've been audited. One of them did have to come up with changes and is now dealing with a $10,000 fine. On that basis, I would see no reason whatsoever to cheat. Despite, yes, the IRS can't audit everyone, but all said and done, if you get audited, ooh la la.
Hey, Don, how you said you're a recent citizen. How recently did you become a citizen?
2010.
From where?
From England.
Did you cheat on your taxes in England?
No, no.
Because you're worried about getting caught. What's that?
It's not so much about worrying about getting caught. It's just knowing what the penalties are for doing so. And from a moral standpoint, I just don't see the point. You know, if you live somewhere, you pay your dues, and you get what you get out of it.
Hey, Don, thank you so much for your call and your honesty. 877-301-8970. He says it's a moral issue with him, Marjorie. And by the way, it is. Can I tell you something? Whenever you, I have to be candid. There have been moments when I've thought, well, maybe should I take an extra deduction? Should I not? Which I have not done.
Should
you
I?
You do start
comb through the wastebaskets for the receipts.
You
of
start
my
having
coworkers.
You start having moral compunctions. You really do.
You wonder where those receipts go.
And you also say to yourself that if you do it, then you're basically saying it's okay for everybody to do it. And so at the end, you really should conclude, I think, for reasons of morality, and as Don just said, because you could get audited.
I think it's mostly fear that keeps people, because I don't think most people think they're getting a fair shake.
So let me say, before we get back to the calls, fewer than 10% in these polls, 10, 11% say they actually do cheat. What percent do you think is the real percentage?
If they
weren't worried about answering honestly a survey.
If they weren't worried about being audited?
No. When people are polled and said, have you ever cheated?
Uh-huh.
And 90% say no. What do you think the true number is?
Never cheated. I would say the number is much higher.
Lower.
The point I'm trying to make is, who in the world, when you get someone picking up, calling you on the telephone, cheat in your taxes? Why? Yes, I do. And here's my telephone number.
Yeah.
And here's my address. And here's my Social Security number. I mean, nobody's going to tell them the truth about that
point.
If they are cheating. I would guess. Okay, let's go to John from Chatham. Are you cheating like mad down there in Chatham, John?
Hey, John.
Unfortunately, I'm more than cheating. I'm actually completely not filing, and out of fear of the backlash of not filing in the past.
Wait, how long have you not filed for?
We're coming up on 13 years.
And so, wait, your theory is if you start filing now, they'd all of a sudden realize you haven't filed for the prior decade?
No, the theory now is I need to become legal beagle and actually walk in there before they find out that I haven't done it. And say, how do we come to an agreement? How do I become clear on this?
I think you need a good lawyer, John, is what you need to walk with you.
Kind of more of the backstory is I've been in and out of institutions most of my life. So after I turned 18, I got out, started working, didn't file taxes, kind of got in that short term, oh, well, I'll take care of it later. Well, then I got into drugs. Long story short, here we are years later where I'm completely clean, have a family, and this is the final thing on my list of things to do.
John, let me just say, I am not giving you this advice as a former lawyer. I'm giving you this advice as a friend. I would suggest you go find a lawyer really quickly and clean this thing up, because if they get to you before you get to them, it's probably not going to be pretty. John, good luck. Keep us apprised. Let us know how it goes down the line.
Remember those stories a few years ago in People magazine about people being dragged out of their cars and dragged out of their homes and all these kinds of things? I mean, they're a very scary operation, if you ask me. They get such bad publicity about that.
What are you talking about? IRS?
Yes.
Dragging people out of their homes for tax arrears?
Fights about taxes. It was a big scandal. You don't remember this?
No, I don't.
And then the IRS had to, they were embarrassed, and the president, it might have even been a long time ago. It might have been Reagan that was the president. It was a long time ago.
Did you say it was a couple of years ago? In fact, years ago. It was either 30 years ago or it was
under last
President
week.
Obama.
But I do remember that stuck with me all these years. You don't want to mess with the Internal Revenue Service. Let's go to Joe Allen. Hi, Joe Allen in Ringe.
Hi.
Hi.
I think that taxes are the price of civilization. And I think we don't talk about it enough in those terms. And for at least 30 years or more, Republicans have been pandering to the worst instincts of the public and, you know, saying taxes are bad, taxes are bad. And people don't think about the other side of it as often as I think they should.
You know, by the way, the person, the original person who I think said that was Oliver Wendell Holmes, I believe.
Really?
But a person who quotes it repeatedly, mm-hmm. is actually the current governor. He said it on more than long before this recent tax package about prices.
He must be quoting me.
I think he actually, I think he did
well,
say Joe Allen was the source.
Upstanding American, Joe Allen. Thank you very much for the call.
That's heartening, is it not?
I suspect that Joe Allen is in the minority and not the majority.
No, most people would quote and say, yes, taxes are the price we pay for civilization. I just like a reduced price for civilization.
Well, they're
not
sure they really want to spend $5,000 for those special military toilets, you know, that they have to send over to the troops in Afghanistan or wherever.
Let's go to Drew in Braintree. Drew in Braintree, you're on with Jim and Marjorie. We're 3 days before tax day, and that's what we're talking about. Hi, Drew.
How are you?
Great.
Good. So I'm actually under 30 years old, and I actually do online courses. College courses, and
yep.
when I was signing up for it, my employer generously pays my tuition, and as I was signing up, my advisor said, hey, well, if you say that you don't get reimbursed, you can still get the money from your employer and deduct all your courses from your taxes, which comes to between $6,000 and $8,000 a year.
Did you do that? Did you do that, Drew?
Oh, yeah.
And oh yeah, and Drew, you were you understood that that was probably, I guess, let me double dipping of a sort. Is that you understood that, right?
Yeah, a bit. Kind of a struggling student, and that's helped me pay for a lot of the things that I need.
Do you have any moral compunctions at the time, or no?
I feel bad about it, but
not that bad.
Not that bad enough.
Drew, thanks for your candor. We appreciate it.
We have a good email here from James who says, I thought I heard somewhere that the U.S. would not have a budget deficit if everyone paid their legal tax obligation. And we do, James, have a statistic here that from the United States Treasury that says that the country loses $250 billion annually, they estimate, from unreported income, which indicates that many people are cheating and that some of those who do admit they cheat admit they work under the table, you know, they get paid in cash. They're also cheaters in general, more likely to keep the wrong change from a cashier, more likely to lie about income to qualify for welfare, and more likely, listen to this, to steal from their own child's piggy bank.
No,
that is really the bottom
really
of the barrel.
Low.
Stealing from your kids. Piggy bank. Our numbers are 877, our number is, I should say, 877-301-8970. Our email is bpr@wgbh.org. Let's go to John in Holliston. What do you think, John?
Yes, hi. How are you guys doing?
Excellent.
Good.
Thank you.
Glad to hear on the station. I'm so happy you can't believe.
Well, we're happy.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, John.
Listen, I just want to not change the subject here, change the direction. The state of Massachusetts, you think the federal government is bad? You ask anybody around, the state of Massachusetts is absolutely horrendous.
How so? What
They're like
mean?
A shark versus a little frog biting. I'm serious.
What do you mean vis-a-vis tax auditing, or you mean in general?
No, I'm talking just in general. I've owed the money. I've been being out of employment and stuff like that, not working. And, you know, this typical problem a lot of people have. But, you know, I owed money. Several thousand dollars. And the thing is, a few years ago, I've been dealing for several years now. I had a good job working for a good company, had it for almost a year. I had like $7,000 at the time. I couldn't pay. I was having trouble. They cleaned my bank account out, just cleaned it out. I lost my job because of it, because I couldn't even get my car back on the road.
Oh, John.
This is not just me. I'm not just crying, poor me. This happens to a lot of people.
Hey, John, this show is becoming Ask the Lawyer, and I don't mean it, but did you talk to a lawyer in the midst of this thing, or no?
They didn't do anything. These people, I'm telling you, I'm not the only one with this problem. You should really, I've heard more stories because of this. My own tax accountant said a woman was trying to pay. She had 20 people employed for the state, for her own company. They closed it down, put everybody out of work. This is how they solve problems. Another thing, they'll take your license away. They will take your license away if you don't pay. That works pretty well.
Hey, John, can I make a suggestion? If you have an opportunity, go to bpr@wgbh.org. Fill in the blanks. Email us and tell us the story about what happened to you. And
yeah, I'm still dealing with them now.
I got you. And let's see if we can get some action on this thing, too. John, thanks for the call. Good luck. But do email us.
Good luck
BPR,
to you guys.
We appreciate it. wgbh.org.
You
well,
see?
That was a
upbeat
conversation, wasn't it?
You didn't believe me about dragging people out of the houses. You didn't believe me.
I understand.
What did John just say?
He said he was figuratively dragged out of the
okay.
house. Great.
Enough of that. I would advise you all to pay your taxes because when do you have to have min tax man?
Federally on Monday. State, if you're from Massachusetts, on Tuesday. But by the way, if you pay what you owe, I hate to be the tax man advisor here, mm-hmm. you can actually get an extension. If you just Google extension on taxes, you
can do that. I do know that.
I know. Fine. Okay, good.
Okay, up next.
Thank you.
Up next.
I'm not even going to ask Marjorie what she's doing. Let's just move on.
It's Open Mic with Emily Rooney, who is probably the world's foremost expert on scandals and shenanigans at the starting line of Monday's Boston Marathon. Stay tuned for Emily on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
Time is running out on your chance to win the trip of a lifetime. Enter to win a trip for two to Hong Kong, generously donated by the Hong Kong Tourism Board and General Tours World Traveler. Explore one of the world's most unique cities over 5 days and four nights, but act fast. This contest ends on April 19th. For contest rules and more information, visit WGBHnews.org.
Funding for our programs comes from you and Dedham Savings, providing personal and business banking services to the community. Proud to support WGBH and the Boston Speaker Series. Wednesday, April 24th with Nando Parado at Boston Symphony Hall. And Welch & Forbes, celebrating 175 years of serving as wealth advisors to New England families. Welch & Forbes, knowing wealth, knowing you. On the web at welchforbes.com.
You're listening to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan. We're joined by a woman who is full of surprises. We learned this morning that for 15 yep. years, including when she was the boss, she produced Channel 5's coverage of the start of the Boston Marathon in Hopkinton. She's the host of Greater Boston, our Friday open mic. Hello, Emily.
Yeah, it didn't matter. I rose right through the ranks. I was assignment manager, then I was assistant news director, then I was news director. The memo would come out every year. You know, whoever was producing our coverage, Emily Rooney, Hopkinton. That was my assignment.
Why? By choice? Or
no. And somebody let me know that was a Christian deal. That was horrible. I had to get up at 4 in the morning. And my job was to drive to the station, pick up the stars who were actually going to be on the air.
Your Channel 5 stars.
Yeah, like Mike Lynch, Mike Dowling. We drove out. We always drove the marathon route. You know, 135 went out there. It was kind of fun to. And then you stood around, you know, interviewing the police chief, going to the pancake breakfast. And, but I have the best all-time story.
We're ready. We're ready.
All right, so there I am, start line, and it was always freezing cold, too, there in the morning. But I'm standing with, you know, doing the police chief and, you know, the pancake breakfast. And this is back when the marathon took off at noon, and the wheelchair races went off at 11:45. And this is, I don't know, late 80s, early 90s. We didn't have the sophisticated technology we have now, so we didn't follow the wheelchair racers all the way. We only followed them when they got to the finish line or maybe Heartbreak Hill when you had the live truck there. So the wheelchair race takes off, 11:45, bang, the gun goes off. There's a steep hill, if you've been to the start line, and I know the start line very well. Right away, there's a steep hill. It goes right down, and so they really get a lot of speed on these wheelchairs. There's a crash, I mean, a wreck. And we just get word up the hill, because the cameras aren't on it. So Dowling or Mike Lynch or somebody says to me, Emily, you got to run down there and find out what happened. You know, report back. So we're running down there. Oh, yeah, I'm like, I'm not a runner. I'm checking out the whole situation. I go running back up the hill, and Lynch says to me, well, what happened? I said, well, most of them got out of the chair, dusted themselves off, pushed the chair to the side. Some of them got back in and kept going. These are wheelchair guys.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
They get out of the chair,
most of
get
them,
up?
Some and of them were strapped in. They took the straps off, stood up.
Stood up.
Dusted them. How could I make this up?
So wait a second.
So
your contention
cheating is,
well, first of all,
I don't know.
If you're in a wheelchair,
I don't know
do
what the rules are.
Can
I'm
an able-bodied person be in a wheelchair?
I guess. I don't know. All I know is what I saw. And so, I'm Lynch or whoever it is debriefing me. And I said, yeah, no. I mean, some of them were
legit,
did not get out of their wheelchairs, but at least half of them did.
Did that make it onto the evening news on Channel
5? Just through the
5?
Interview with me, because there was no cameras on it.
Oh, so you couldn't prove it.
No, I don't think I had to prove it. I mean, I don't know what the rules are for being in a wheelchair, but that happened.
God, maybe I'm naive. I sort of thought if you were in a wheelchair, you were in some way
a paraplegic.
Disabled.
They're not. I don't think they're. I think they are, but not necessarily. You're not necessarily a paraplegic.
But you may be disabled in some way. I mean,
Well, it shouldn't be like a broken wrist or something. You know what I mean? You feel like there might be something.
Well, if you're broken wrist,
well,
you're obviously not doing it.
These people are athletes. I mean, there's no question about
that. Well, the muscles
on the
wheelchair,
people.
I don't
know what the requirements are to qualify to Jim's going, I don't believe this.
No,
I'm
I'm thinking of you. No, only because I know you a little. I'm thinking of the image of Emily Rooney running down the hill. Yeah. And experiencing this moment.
Well, you know what I always hear about the starting line at Hopkinton is that the neighbors always get, there's not enough porta potties, and the neighbors get very upset about people using their front lawn.
Well, there's 8,000 people.
Yeah, 8,000
at the start line.
It's huge.
And the elite runners are in their own place where the pancake breakfast is, so there's bathrooms there. But they did have a porta potty set up, but it was. And you're right. I mean, there was no, and he was standing around for hours and hours.
You know, one of the great unanswered questions is if you ultimately became the boss, why did you continue to assign yourself
You didn't look at the memo, and, you know, Linda Pollack, my boss now, is producing the marathon. And I'd look at him, I said, why am I still the Hopkinton producer?
4 o'clock
all
in the
these
morning.
Years.
That's a long time. Were you the first people there at 4 o'clock in the morning?
No, there was tons of people there by the time you got there.
But the
race we were doing
doesn't
the
start.
Cut-ins. Cut-ins for the eye-opener, everybody, you know.
So the media is there.
The media is there, and a lot of the runners were there because they wanted to be in line because the only people who can get to the front of the line, and this is, by the way, before
runners.
You had the chips
yeah.
that told you yeah. when you crossed the the start line.
Right.
Back in those days, the further you were to the start line, that's you had
the worst
chance.
Your time.
I hesitate to bring this up because Marjorie will mock me, but the two times I ran the New York City Marathon.
Here we go.
I'm sorry.
Stop.
No, wait a second. That's true. It took me 3 minutes. To get to the starting line.
Yeah,
that's how
right.
intense the
that's
crowd
right.
is. Okay, so let's
oh,
find out.
Oh, we have
out.
An answer from Martha. Martha just emailed in and said there are many people who are not fully incapacitated yeah. but need wheelchairs part of the time.
Yeah.
So maybe Martha
so maybe
has the answer.
Fine. So they're partially disabled or whatever.
I just have to say it took me by surprise.
Are you as curmudgeon-y as Marjorie writes every several years in the Herald an embarrassing piece about how personally inconvenienced she is
it's a horror.
By the
right,
marathon
so
going down
night,
right by her house.
Last night, they've already got Copley Square shut off. The traffic is backed all the way up the Mass Pike, and all they need is one of those little signs, you know, the digital signs now that says Copley Square closed. Fine. Yeah. No. People are doing they get off, they take the left, they see that it's shut, then they go around in the loop, around in the loop. Everybody's doing it. It would be so simple. And it's Thursday, so that means it's going to be shut through Monday
right.
night.
And you can't. The problem is, if you live on the marathon route, which I do, if you were trying to get from one side of the marathon route to the other, you have to basically drive to Framingham.
No, that's what I do.
And then turn around and come back the other way.
I play tennis at Longwood, so I have to go. I go Store Drive to the Mass Pike to Route 9. No, that's what I do.
You have to do it.
To get to the
it's
other
crazy.
Side of...
Yeah.
I went through Western Pennsylvania to get to Annisianica. Marjorie, how many times did I, 2 years ago, because of no signage and my own stupidity, I got caught in it. How many times did I call you on my route from Dorchester to Newton to get to Annisianica?
You must have called me 10 times because he made fun of me for complaining and said, you are just a crab and a curmudgeon.
Then,
it's one day a year. It's not one day a year
no,
because,
it's not.
In fact, all the races,
no, all
races. The marches
I've had
come
this,
right by my house.
I've said it to Mayor Menino and he got all annoyed at me. I said, we're going to have the next one of these walks for something in Hyde Park.
Exactly.
Or Dorchester.
Or Jim in Cambridge.
Well,
yeah.
actually,
how
you know,
about that?
Remember a couple of years ago when Scott Lehigh wrote a piece in the Globe against all the walks? And
I think it was Larry Harmon.
No, Scott wrote this piece.
Larry Harmon did,
well,
too.
Did too. And said, essentially, write a check.
Exactly.
Don't inconvenience us.
Write
a check if you're a good person.
That's what Wendy Kaminer says. I say the same thing.
Write a check.
Okay.
Too much.
I'll live with the marathon if we can get rid of all those other things. Walk for hunger, the walk for bread. It just doesn't work.
This is like Marjorie squared. This is unbelievable.
Oh, I can't
it's like your evil twins.
Well, if you can't get out of
downtown, there's one.
Starting
Sunday,
it's very upsetting.
Every week.
Every week.
Sometimes Saturday and Sunday.
That's right.
Let me.
Entire
for the record, I'm in favor of all the walks because I don't live in Boston or Brooklyn.
Right.
Okay, every week, Emily, we ask you who's the real deal. Since we saw you last, four new candidates, Marty Walsh for mayor, Marty Walsh the state rep, Michael Ross, the former president of city council, Felix Arroyo, city councilor, and Rob Consalvo, another city councilor. Who's the real deal?
I think Marty Walsh and Mike Ross are the two top contenders for real deal. I have to say, Felix Arroyo and Rob Consalvo are also really good people. I like Felix a lot. I was actually impressed with Rob Consalvo. I don't think either one of them has a chance. I think Marty Walsh has a chance. I think Michael Ross has a chance.
What about the DA with all the money?
Well, we talked
about the new.
Oh, the new people.
We just talked to Peter Galzinis at 12 o'clock, and I'm with him on this Arroyo thing. The guy's got a huge personality.
He does.
He's the only major person of color, some lesser candidates in this race. He's young. He's wildly enthusiastic. I think he's a great crowd-pleasing kind of speaker.
Yeah, I like all those things about him, too.
You don't think in a majority-minority city he makes it into the final?
No, because they don't vote.
But it's also, well, they may vote. The minority people may vote. There's been a huge minority turnout in the Deval Patrick races. And
well, it's also been 30 years since a serious candidate of color with Mel King.
You don't need that many votes. I mean, as Galzinis, Peter pointed out in his column today in the Herald, all you really need, depending on how many people
20%.
Vote. 20%. Yeah, 20,000 votes, if even that. So if Felix Arroyo, who's a very charismatic guy,
can excite
people as the first Latino mayor, I think it's a possibility.
Well, why do you think Ross and Walsh, give us a quick one, or the real deals?
Well, I don't know. Both of them for just their passion about the city. I mean, Marty Walsh, you know, lives in Dorchester, just has a wide-ranging, you know, understanding and passion in a way that, not that the other guys don't, but you're going to have to cross a lot of layers here. And just focusing on one issue like the Boston schools isn't going to cut it. Mike Ross, here's another guy with a terrific personality.
He's an impressive character, he is.
You know, and he's a doer. You know, he's the food trucks, and he's a no-nonsense cut-through
kind of
guy.
He's your city councilor, isn't he?
Yeah,
I thought so. So has he been impressive there in the back bay?
Very, very impressive.
Very impressive in the
back
bay.
Wait a second. The one thing you're citing as evidence of his great work are the food trucks?
Well, they're important.
I have to say.
I love the food trucks, but still.
You know, how about rats? I mean, there's a lot of stuff.
Garbage.
Graffiti.
Yeah.
Yeah. All these things
they have those
big
grilled cheese food trucks at the Cleveland Circle. And let me tell you.
You have one of those, by the
way? Oh, they're great.
I haven't had one. Are they good?
Oh, they're spectacular.
What's the name of that? Do any of you guys in there know? What's the name of the cheese?
We've done it. What's the story?
We had them on, too, on our other radio show.
Yeah.
No, it's not called grilled cheese. In fact, cheese is not in the title.
You know, it's really hot and it gets all over the side of the bread. Yeah.
Burns your skin if you get it right away. I love that kind of thing.
I hate to say I like the American cheese best. It's really bad for you.
Anyway, I wouldn't want to be in this race. I mean, you know, none of them are going to be able to afford to do TV ads because, first of all, what good does it do? You can't do TV ads go everywhere, and you want to just focus on Boston and, you know, putting it on, what is that, BNN, Boston Neighborhood Network? That's not going to work. Nobody watches that.
Yeah, but wait a second. But I agree with you generally, but when most of the candidates will not have enough money, and you have Conley with his almost a million, you have Mike Ross, who I think is going to raise a ton of dough.
Yeah, he will.
And has great ability to, and he's already, according to the Globe or the Herald, got $250,000. If two or three are on TV, even if there's only tangential impact, that could be enough to put you over the top there.
You make a good point, too. We talk about Felix Arroyo being the first possible Latino mayor. Michael Ross, correct me if I'm wrong,
first Jewish
the first
mayor.
Jewish mayor. Yeah. And those firsts are very, you know, and if Ayanna Pressley does get into the race, I don't think she will, but if she does, of course, she could possibly be
the other thing
woman
is there's going to be a lot of confusion with all the Irish white guys, too.
Yeah.
I mean, Connelly
you mix
and
them all
Connelly
up.
And Marty Walsh and, you know, one of them is going to really have to break through.
We Irishmen, we all look alike.
Well, Dan Connelly does have, he's got at least a recognizable. I think people know.
Well, he's on TV almost once a week because of prosecution.
Exactly.
Okay, so I walk into your office this morning, Emily, with great trepidation, and you say, let me ask you a question, and I'm paraphrasing. You say, when you go around and people say to you, where you're from, do you say you're from Cambridge where you live, or do you say you're from Boston? And I say, when I'm out of state, I say I'm from Boston. So what was the point of that?
I saw this great letter to the editor earlier this week in the Boston Globe, and this guy Paul Nevins, who lives in Boston, was responding to a guy who had written a letter to the editor. And this guy starts out his first letter to, like all Bostonians, I look forward to the transformation of downtown crossing into a dynamic. And he goes on and on and on about the transformation of downtown crossing. And then he signs it, Jonathan Unglob, Brookline.
Like all Bostonians, okay.
And so this guy writes back, Paul Nevins, I was fascinated by the letter to the editor by Jonathan Unglob of Boston, blah, blah, blah. The letter begins, like all Bostonians. The problem is, Brookline is not Boston. So his point is that all these people who are, you know, tangential Bostonians are making the decisions about or how Boston should proceed with its development and all this kind of stuff, and they don't live in Boston. He's suggesting that Boston should change its boundaries and that it should really include Brookline and Newton and some of the big contiguous communities. They really would make not only would they make a difference in terms of the tax base, but they use the services probably more than some Bostonians because they're driving into the city every day in and day out.
How about Margaret?
Well, they'll never.
How do you describe yourself?
The same thing. I usually say Boston.
Yeah.
I usually say Boston, and I live in Brookline. But you can't put them all together because it'd be a big fight about the schools. By the way, we just got an email from Judith. Thank you very much, Judith. Roxy's Grilled Cheese.
Roxy's. That is what it is. Roxy's, yeah. Hey, but wait a second. So the look on your face, Emily, and that's the I love radio more than any medium, but I have to say the only problem is you can't see your face. You look like you're borderline enraged that Marjorie and I, who live in Cambridge and Brookline, respectively, have the temerity to travel into Boston like we are this morning for the show.
I did it, too.
And using the services
of this
community.
I did it, too, when I lived in Newton. But here's the difference. Now that I am a Bostonian and I am really inconvenienced by the marathon and the walk for this and the walk for that, I'm actually paying for it, the extra police, the this and that.
Exactly.
You realize that Bostonians share an undue burden for all of this stuff. There's no, you know, payment in lieu of taxes from all the contiguous towns who enjoy all those services at least as much as I do.
Was your daughter born at the Beth Israel Hospital?
Yes, she was.
Now, that's on the Brookline, Boston line. Do you say she was born in Boston or born in Brookline?
Well, the thing on the birth certificate says Boston.
There you go.
She lobbied hard for that. Hey, Emily, before you go away, everybody knows the continuing saga with you, which is going to change at some point.
It is.
Is you're a tea-free kind of gal.
Tea-free.
Meaning as an MBTA-free. All right. Now, a couple of weeks ago, Rich Davies, Secretary of Transportation, was here. He left for you, which we then gave
you
all these maps, and he filled $2 on a one of those Charlie cards out of his own
I still
pocket.
Have it.
Okay. Now you were out doing something the other day.
What are the chances? I'm doing a story about biking.
Yeah,
which we're doing this whole big.
I know it's going to be great.
Initiative. Wait. I hate that word. Here at WGBH in May, Bike Month, and actually it's going to be really fun. So I was taking the driver's point of view. And we were driving around with bicyclists, you know, crossing in front of us. And everything. So I'm at the State House doing an interview outside. Who comes along? Rich Davies. Come on, let's jump on the T right now. I can't. You know, I'm driving today. I've got my car here. So.
You know that I don't know if I said this to you, that after you said one of the reasons you don't take the T is because when you come to work with all this crap, you're carrying stuff. He told me he would carry. He would personally meet you and carry your things
fine.
To the
you
T.
You said the same thing. But the problem is... I would, if I were actually going to take the two, I would have to do it myself. It's very nice of you to offer, nice of Rich Davies to offer. But if I were taking the tea myself, right, Marjorie, I'd have to carry it all.
Would you go with her? It sounds
and
like
it's heavy. You have to go up the stairs, down the stairs. It's
one day
not
this
easy
week, I had four bags and, you know, all
the how often, you know, something like having a lot of stuff and getting to the bottom of the government center and finding out the escalator's broken. That's always, you ever have that happen
no,
to you?
No, I have not.
That's
Marjorie.
A real problem. There's a
well,
lot of stairs.
Well, don't they have all those, you know, didn't the ADA force them to put in all those
elevators
and all that?
Yeah, but if you were taking an elevator,
I complained
you've never
about
been
that
on the,
too.
You've never been on the T. You complained about the elevators?
That was a waste.
What? With the elevators so that people who are disabled can actually... I can't stand this.
You are tough, Emily
that
Rooney.
I think tough is not tough. The right word. But in any case, what's on Beat Press tonight at 7? We know Marjorie isn't, but what is on?
Well, we have another one of these stories. This one's out... Well, the story is based in Colorado where a judge is threatening to put a reporter in jail for not releasing her sources. She's the one, she works for FoxNews.com. Actually, she's based in New York, but she broke that terrific story about how that guy, James Holmes, had a notebook that he sent to his psychiatrist
or the shrink, right?
With all these graphic pictures of stick figures and murder
this was
and
the
mayhem.
Shooter in Aurora.
And she reported it. Well, there was a gag order at the time. Now she's facing jail time if she doesn't reveal her sources, which, you know, they've already debriefed some of these law enforcement people. Of course, no one's admitting they did it, but the judge. Meanwhile, the lawyers are trying to get the notebook thrown out as evidence, so it may end up being a moot point. But, you know, once again, you know, the reporter. You know, they can't figure out a way other than shaking down some reporter to figure out. You know.
One of your best friends, Susan Warnick, she faced jail
she
time years back, but it was pretty scary.
That was scary because there was a Revere cop involved and they were looting stuff out of a CVS. And she got a tip about the story. And, you know, she was the only one who knew who was behind it.
How was that resolved?
The tipster came forward. Same as what happened in... the Judith Miller case.
To prevent the reporter from having to go to jail? Was it sort of a Good Samaritan
the tipster
kind
came
of thing?
No, it was the tipster himself. Don't give me that. I think he was a Revere cop. I can't really remember all that.
But out of the goodness of his heart.
Yeah, rather than see Susan go to jail.
That's
pretty
neat.
Paul Corsetti from the Boston Herald.
He faced
went
jail.
To, didn't
That's
he go?
Right. That's right. You know something I'm embarrassed to say? I don't
think
remember
he went.
If he actually went, but he
pretty
may have
sure
gone. He was protecting
Paul
his source
Corsetti
as well.
Went.
Because we have no shield law in Massachusetts.
Yeah, we have no
shield
law. Colorado does have a shield law. They're one of 32 states that do, but there's a lot of loopholes in SHIELD laws, and this was one.
Hey, before you go, can I just sum up in case people just tune in? So you're aggravated by the ADA. You're aggravated by the Americans with Disabilities Act. You're aggravated with non-Bostonians using Boston services. Anything else you want to put on the list before you go?
Or I've got more to come, Jim. This is every Friday.
Okay. Emily Rooney, watch her tonight on Beat the Press, a fabulous show at 7 o'clock.
Good it is a Emily. Fabulous show. Okay, Emily is with us every Friday at 1 o'clock. Tune in to Boston Public Radio on Monday for Open Mic with Gene Rivers. Okay, are you one of those people like Jim who can't go to the gym because you're intimidated by those anointed, muscle-bound posers? Do you grunt at the gym? Either way, you're not alone. Grunter or not grunter, that is. Conversation next on Boston Public Radio.
You can sequence the whole human genome today for less than 10 grand. And that, say the scientists, opens a whole lot of doors.
The knowledge we're going to have in 5 years is going to surprise a lot of us. We really do believe it's going to change the face of medicine.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Net present value of human DNA. Next time on Marketplace, it's from APM.
Tonight at 6, here on WGBH Radio.
We love our contributors. That means you. And the Massachusetts Teachers Association, reminding you that learning doesn't just happen in the classroom. It happens all day, every day. Working together, parents and teachers can make this a successful school year for every child in Massachusetts. And the Lincoln Motor Company, introducing the 2013 MKZ Hybrid, a luxury car with an EPA-estimated 45 city miles per gallon. More information at Lincoln.com. Actual mileage will vary.
You're listening to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan. I have to say I'm out of excuses. You know, my defense for years about why I'm not a gym rat, maybe even not a gym mouse, is because I'm intimidated by all the 0% body fat types. You've all seen this. By people posing endlessly in front of these wall-sized mirrors. By large, large men dropping heavy weights. But worst, I'm intimidated by this. Is there anything worse than being at a gym and having somebody next to you do this? This grunting is so intimidating and nauseating.
Yeah.
In any case, here's the question. We learned, I mean, it's been going on for years, but there's a piece in the Globe last week. There's one gym chain, Planet Fitness, that's addressed the problem. We want to know if there was actually a grunt-free place to exercise, like this allegedly is, would it cure your, I don't know what to call it, gymnasium phobia, which is what I have? 877-301-8970. If all this garbage that is, by the way, the reason people pose, the reason they drop the weights, and the reason they grunt, mm-hmm. it's not for them. It's to intimidate lesser humans who are not as, I'm serious, not as fit, can't yeah. bench press as much.
The ones that got the sand kicked at their face.
Exactly, the non-grunters
they didn't
like
eat their
me.
Spinach.
Exactly.
Well, the reason for this Globe piece is that the Planet Fitness business has grown leaps and bounds, 50% in 2011.
Oh, that's huge.
And many people think it's also cheaper. It's like 10 bucks a month. But one of the big reasons is because they come around and actually throw you out. There was a great story. This wasn't in the Globe piece. It was in the New York Times piece about this guy a couple of years ago at one of these Planet Fitness gyms, and he's grunting away, and he's a big, he's a cop, and he's a big bodybuilder. And one of the workers comes over and says, you got to stop it. And he says, I can't stop it. That's what I do. And she says, meet me up front. I'm canceling your membership. And the guy blows her off and says, keeps on lifting the weights. Seconds later, he's surrounded by about 5 or 6 local cops who tell him to drop the weights and leave the gym. And he almost sued the place because he said he was then ridiculed by friends who kept grunting at him every time they saw him.
By the way, number's 877-301-8970. The way they enforce this, apparently, other than when they call the police at Planet Fitness, is they have something called a LUNK.
Yes.
All UNK alarm. It says flashing blue light and a siren that whenever there's prohibited behavior, it does it. Now, again, for people who are not into this, I want you to stop doing whatever you're doing for 1 second. Listen to this sound and tell me this does not intimidate any mere mortal. Listen. Okay, enough. I mean, real. It is not only is it nauseating and unpleasant to be near. It, I trust me, it is an intent to intimidate everybody who is not grunting. Good for Planet Fitness or any other gym that's doing this thing. And we want to know 877-301-8970. For those of you who avoid gyms like I do, you know what I do? I do like everybody does. I sign up every 2 years. I pay for a 6 month or year membership.
At New Year's.
I go
usually.
For 3 days in a, or after the Boston Marathon right. or when you're seeing a lot of fit people. Yep. You do it for 3 days and you don't go anymore. And the reason you don't go anymore is because all the people around you are there to make you uncomfortable.
But
they have to show how fit they are.
You know, it's usually competitive, the gym scene. And you know what else is equally competitive? The yoga scene.
Yeah, you do hot yoga.
Yes, I do. I do hot yoga, and it's more aerobic than regular yoga, but it is a big competition. Everybody's got their $80 yoga pants on, and they've got their $40 yoga shirt top, and if you don't have it
you
on...
You have all that?
Well, there is a practical reason for wearing it because of the sweating. But
do
you know
people
what,
grunt at yoga? They
you know
don't
what
grunt.
They do?
No, what do they do?
They give these...
Oh, I hate that too. I hate that.
You know, it sounds like they're having sex almost. You know, when you look around, I went with my teenage daughter there, and she's looking around, she's saying, listen to these people. They're all moaning and groaning. What's up with that? But they're sort of getting into it. But they do tell you all the time, you're not supposed to be competing with your fellow yogis. It's supposed to be everybody's here together. But the fact is, everybody does compete, and they're checking out each other's downward dogs and warrior ones and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, let me just say, before
and
we get to the
each
calls,
other's weight.
The whole, even if this is imperfect, this Planet Fitness approach here, the concept, you totally agree. You're a very fit person. The people that haven't seen you don't. I mean, you're really very fit kind of.
Well, sort of fit.
Human, you are.
I'm more fit than
but,
you.
But for the, I'm not unfit, Marjorie. I'm not as fit okay. as you are. And all I'm saying is it's a,
sorry,
if you're
Jim.
A normal human being or somebody who needs to lose a few pounds or somebody who's not as you know as taught as you should be, it's really intimidating. And the whole concept behind this grunt-free zone, I think, is really, really terrific. Let's go to Jackson. You're in Lawrence. You're on the Jim and Marjorie. We're talking grunt-free zones at gymnasiums. Welcome. Hey, Jackson.
Very good. Thank you.
Good. What's up?
So basically, I'm actually a Planet Fitness member.
Okay.
I joined because it was affordable. But the difficulty, and this is from my understanding as a man who's always been active, formerly as a teen, when you're taught to lift, the whole point about grunting is to help you with that last breath.
It is?
You're supposed to push and grunt out basically during your last repetition. Not during the whole time,
uh-huh.
but during your last repetition. So if you're used to lifting in a certain manner, you're kind of pre-programmed. So if you're not meant to intimidate the person by dropping the weight, but actually you're trying to protect yourself by not hurting yourself, by not hurting, holding on to your breath.
Oh, so if you've wait a second. So have you ever been, you're a Planet Fitness member, have you ever been disciplined for grunting?
I have once.
What'd they do to you?
Actually, the manager just came up and he explained to me, listen, this is not allowed at the gym. So on and so forth. And I respect it. I respect it. But at times, I've actually taught on several occasions to switch gyms.
So is it hard, Jackson, to get that last breath without the grunt?
At times, yes. Because, like I said, for 10 years, since the age of 15, till about, you know, 27, 28, now I'm 30, you're programmed to, you know,
yeah.
push with that last grunt. So now I have to reprogram myself
yeah.
to somewhat do it quietly.
How much can you bench press, Jackson?
225?
Yeah, I can only bench press like 220. So it'd be really intimidating. Okay, maybe not. Jackson, thank you for a fine call. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Jackson. Did you read this, that weightlifters produce between 2 and 5% more force when they grunt, mm-hmm. Jim? And you know how, I mean, it's different because it's not at the gym, but the tennis players? when they serve.
Horrible, horrible.
But they're all grunting. Monica
Seles.
Seles and Maria Sharapova, the whole thing about them grunting when they...
They stopped them from grunting.
And men do it too, correct?
But before Jackson called, and I'm really glad he called, my position was going to be if you got to grunt, go to another gym. But he made a great point. The other allure of Planet Fitness is it's one of the cheapest gyms.
Yeah, 10 bucks.
It's 10 bucks for the basic thing.
So let me be clear, Jim, that when you are lifting up to 100 pounds, you can do it grunt-free, but over 200 pounds, you have to grunt yourself.
I have to say, I really wouldn't know, Marjorie, to be perfectly honest. It's not something I've ever had a real experience with. Sean and Dedham, you're next with Jim and Marjorie on Boston Public Radio. Welcome, Sean.
Hi, Sean.
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Great.
Jimmy, the last time Marjorie thought of her grunting was when she had that date stay overnight.
Thank you, Sean. We understand.
Hey, Jim, are you still lifting?
Not as much as I used to. I guess I'd say that, Sean.
Yeah. Hey, 8 out of 10 groaners drive an analog Z. That's proven, by the way.
Okay. Thank you.
Have a good one.
And you too. It's been a great pleasure talking to you. Alice here in Weymouth. You're talking to Jim and Marjorie. We're talking about grunt-free gymnasiums, which I think is a fabulous idea. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea too, Marjorie and Jim. I'm 55 years old, and I actually joined Planet Fitness probably about 5 years ago. Number one, like you say, it's 10 bucks a month. But number two, the other thing about a lot of gyms is they really have a reputation of being kind of a meat market.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I just want to go and exercise. I don't want to be annoyed. I don't want to listen to people grunting and throwing weight. And I think their model has really worked.
Are you fitter? How much fitter? I hope you are. How much fitter are you 5 years after the fact than when you joined Planet Fitness, Alice?
Well, I did it off and on a lot just because, you know, I didn't have the time, but I've been a lot more faithful lately. And in the last year, I've lost close to 40 pounds.
Wow.
I know. And I'm a lot more fit, I have to tell you. I can bench press about 100 pounds now, which to me is amazing.
That is amazing.
I love the joy in your voice, Alice. It's great.
You know, you said before, and it's a big attraction, the affordability of the 10 bucks a month. But one of the reasons I always went to women's gyms was just to avoid this whole scene that would be, I mean, not that there isn't competition among the women, there is, but you didn't have to worry about, you know, doing a buttocks tuck or something next to some guy.
Right. And, you know, the women's gyms, you're absolutely right. That's true. But again, it's for me anyway, it's definitely a cost issue because those gyms are way more expensive.
They are. It's true. And thank you very much for the call, Alice. Congratulations on all that weight loss. You know, they make that point. They don't do the pools. They don't do all the fancy stuff at Planet Fitness. It's basically, you know, weights. And
that's what you get for 10 bucks, and you don't have any grunting. Let's hear the grunting one more time if we can. Just again, if you're not a gym rat kind of person, this is what you experience at many of these places. Here it is. I mean, they shouldn't just be thrown out of Planet Fitness. They should be arrested. John and Needham, you're on with Jim and Marjorie on Boston Public Radio. Hey, John.
Hi, folks. The answer is Coco Fit Club. KOKO.
What is it?
KOKO. No barbells. It's personal training without the personal trainer.
Oh.
It's all done through software. You use a device that's sort of like the Universal Gym. You select the program. You do a strength test to determine how strong you are, how much you can lift. And then the program determines how much you lift, how many reps to do, what kinds of exercises to do. It's all handled through the software. You can check out your progress online
on
your cell phone.
So you do it at home. You don't go to the gym.
No,
you do it at home. Okay.
No, you don't do it at home. You go to a Coco Fit Club.
Oh, you go to a Coco Fit Club. Okay, John.
Yeah. Needham, Sudbury, Marlboro, Acton, those are four that I'm aware of. It's a great.
Are you the sales manager for a Coco Fit Club
No, my son is a co-owner.
Oh, well, that's an honest. Good luck to your
John.
Kid. Thanks for the PR, John. We appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you very much. Okay, up next, what do Anthony Weiner, LL Cool J, and Marshmallow Cream have in common? They're all fair game on our Friday news quiz. Stay tuned for our quiz on Boston Public Radio.
Thank you. The Reverend Jim Wallace was known for his outspokenness on politics as well as faith, but a while ago, just as his public profile was the highest, he decided to take a break, to think. Now he's back with a new book called On God's Side, What Religion Forgets and Politics Hasn't Learned About Serving the Common Good. We'll talk about it next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 2, here on 89.7 WGBH.
WGBH programs exist because of you and Gardner Mattress, specializing in handmade, lace-tufted, and custom-made mattresses. Handcrafted wood bed frames on display also, celebrating 80 years, located in Salem, Woburn, and Newton. GardnerMattress.com. And Davis, Malm, and DeAugustine, PC, attorneys at law, knowing the lay of the land, not just the law. On the web at DavisMalm.com. DavisMalm.com.
You're listening to Boston Public Radio. I am Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan. On our Friday news quiz today, it is our first battle of the mayors.
Yeah.
In one corner is the mayor of Salem since 2006. She'd be Kim Driscoll. Mayor Driscoll, it's a pleasure to see you.
Nice to see you, too.
And in the other corner, serving his fifth term as mayor of Somerville, very tough guy, I know this firsthand, he'd be Joseph Curtatone. How are you, Mayor Curtatone?
Jim, I'm great. Thanks for having me, Marjorie.
Thank you very much for coming in.
Excited to be here. I'm a little intimidated by my colleague from Salem. But,
it's okay.
I think you should be. I know her a little bit. You guys, before we get to the quiz, Marjorie's going to ask questions of Mayor Driscoll. I'll do Mayor Curtatone since I'm one town over.
Boy.
Exactly. Can I ask you, Deval Patrick was here a couple of days, and we got deeply into that. You're both Democrats, right?
Yes.
We got into this Democrat-on-Democrat warfare on Beacon Hill, $1.9 billion in taxes from the governor, $500 million for transportation only from the legislature, at least so far, the House of Representatives. Starting with you, Kim Driscoll, where are you in this fight, and why?
I definitely think that, if we could get to a number that was more representative of what the needs are, certainly the governor put his best ideas. The House has some good ideas. I think a little bit more would be great. I like the compromise the Senate's pitching. I think it's responsible to try and meet this transportation problem that we have. And the worst thing we can do is tell people we solved the transportation problem and not.
You agree with him, with Deval Patrick, that this does not solve the transportation?
Well, I think the Senate's in a good place right now. I don't know if he was referring to the Senate number
or
the House number.
No, this is right after the House. This is the day after the House vote.
It seems like, to me, that's a little bit more of an enhancement. It puts us in a better position to really meet some of the needs of state of good repair and do a little bit of the growth as well. So I'm hopeful that's a good compromise that everybody can agree to. I think there's full agreement that we got a transportation problem and we can't just keep doing things piecemeal and having a comprehensive, sustainable plan so that we're not doing this next May and having a crisis around T prices and what are we going to do for regional transit authorities. This really addresses that. And most of all, for local communities, the vast majority of roads that people travel on, Joe and I and other mayors and local officials are responsible for.
How about you, Joe Curtatone?
No, I agree with Kim Driscoll. We certainly appreciate the work the House did. The $500 million number, no, it wasn't enough. But I want to remind people we're at zero the week before. We're some pretty smart people at Beacon Hill. It is a political process, though, with real-life implications. And what's at stake here is whether or not we're going to be competitive in the 21st century global economy. Massachusetts, it's more than getting to point A and point B. We're really investing in our future, and that's what I admire about the governor. But there is room for negotiation. The Senate plan is certainly much closer to the Mass Taxpayer Foundation number. And $800 million, if that's a real number, that's going to work. And the governor has signaled that, and the House and the Senate. So I hope, you know, we can get to that place and really invest in our future.
Very quickly, though, when I used to be a lobbyist, I use the term loosely, on Beacon Hill, you know what I hear all the time? Mayors have it the best. The state reps and senators, look at the look on Kim Driscoll's face.
That's a quiz question.
Mayors have it the best because we, the state reps and senators, have to take the tough vote to raise people's taxes. Now, Curtatone's doing the same thing. And you guys get to spend the money. Quick response, Kim Driscoll.
You know, I think that there's no better job than being mayor, but it's tough. We say no all the time. We have to balance budgets. We rely on the state to be a partner and to work with us. And I'm not saying state reps or state senators have it easy, but certainly we like to work with them to solve problems. That's what we're doing. I think being mayor is great, but it's hard.
Yeah, 10 degrees, you know, Joe Curtatone.
We govern where the rubber meets the road, and I don't want to minimize the responsibilities of our state senators and reps. They have a tough job, too, and they have to make tough decisions. We have to say no every day.
Could you describe the look on both your faces when I said that? Would you do that? Okay, let's start.
It is the best job in the world. I will admit that.
Let's start the quiz. Marjorie, you'll do it with Mayor Driscoll.
Okay, you ready?
I think so.
Here's Minnesota Congressman Keith Ellison. Whose legacy is he talking about? We're going to play the clip in a second. And why is his legacy at stake?
We definitely don't like this. This will undermine his legacy, and I'm going to try to get him to not do it. We're going to fight it.
Okay, whose legacy?
I gotta believe that's President Obama and their recent budget he put out in cutting Social Security.
Very good.
She is
good.
Ready for action.
Very
this Kim
good.
Driscoll.
I'm in trouble here.
Point for the mayor of Salem, which is a beautiful town, by the way.
And by the way, were you surprised when Elizabeth Warren, real, and Ed Markey?
She was here this morning. She was in Salem this morning. We talked about it.
They both went big time attacking Barack Obama on this whole thing. Were you surprised by that?
No, I'm not. I spoke to the senator 2 days ago, and. You know, these are the things they campaigned on, things they campaigned to save. And that's, you know, so I they're going to speak their piece and speak their mind and fight for their constituents. But during that senatorial campaign, this is what she said she fought to protect.
But don't you think most people know that we're going to have to do something about Social Security? I mean, the average citizen, even people that are depending on it, they're going to have to do something about it.
I think we all understand that tough decisions have to be made, yeah. But we certainly don't want to sacrifice our future and people's ability to live a good quality of life.
Yeah. Also, people could say, you know, means testing, for example, which often comes up, primarily would affect only wealthier Social Security recipients. The problem with this chain CPI thing, as it's called, is it affects a lot of people who have no other income.
Okay, well, what's the big fix in Social Security we talk about all the time?
Raise the cap for how much you're taxed.
It's what? Is it 104?
110 or something.
110,000?
Are you both shaking your head? Yes, we should do that?
Yeah, I definitely think we need to look at ways to solve these problems. Senator Warren was in Salem earlier today. We were just touring a community health center, and we talked about this issue. And I think some of it's also the first thing we're going to cut in terms of looking at entitlement programs is Social Security. Widows, seniors, children. Right. Is that the first thing we really have
which
to?
Which doesn't contribute to the national debt.
We really need to address it, but can we start with a military-industrial complex? Could we start with closing loopholes? There's definitely options that will address the issue, but also, you know, not hurt the folks that we think we need to help the most.
Okay, Joe Caratoni, you were way behind after one question.
I'm waving the white flag. Okay. Yeah, if I get a million T-bomb bill, I'll forfeit this race to Kim.
Here's your first question. What's ESPN's Colin Cowherd talking about here?
The lamest streak in sports is over. Good as your business is, you got to pay attention to details. Now there's lots of empty seats.
Okay, take it away, Joe Caratoni.
He's talking about the 794 Red Sox sellout streak.
Do you notice he throws in the 794? No extra points for
80-20 on playoffs.
Very nicely done.
Very good. Very good.
Okay, all next right. one, Marjorie.
Okay. Ready, Mayor Driscoll?
I am.
Okay, who is this dictating a message to Stephen Colbert, and why did he dictate it?
Just spent
amazing time with Colbert. Question, is he sane?
Is he sane?
He is cool.
Can I put an exclamation mark at the end of that, sir?
Yeah, I haven't used 140 yet. You can.
Yeah, you got some more left. Anything else? You don't have to.
No, I'm done.
You're done?
Okay, I suspect you may recognize
so
that voice.
I guess it depends on what the meaning of is. I think that would be President Clinton.
Okay, here is the bonus question, which is a little bit harder. What is Bill Clinton's Twitter handle?
What is Bill Clinton's
Twitter
handle?
Created by Stephen Colbert, I think. It's pretty good.
I should know this. Oh, I can't say what I'm thinking right now. at Bill Clinton.
No,
how
about it, Joe Caratoni? You can steal these points.
Is it at Bubba?
That's close, actually.
Really good. It's at Prez Billy Jeff.
That's really good.
Very good.
Yeah, okay. I love that.
Joe Caratoni, you can take the lead here. Now, which former congressman is the very same Stephen Colbert talking about?
That lowering in the douchey level has not come easy. As brother pointed out, no one has been harder on him than he has been on himself. And we all know how hard he can be on himself.
Okay, who exactly is, what former congressman is Stephen Colbert talking about, Joe Caratoni?
I'm a little stumped on this one.
You're stumped?
Know it. You okay. know it.
I think I do
well,
know
you're trying to help him out?
No, I'm just, okay. I think she there's a part of me that's glad he doesn't know it.
Okay, that's good, but sadly you do. Who are they talking about, Mayor Driscoll? Yeah, you can guess.
I'll say Jesse Jackson.
That would be wrong. That's not a horrible guess, but that'd be wrong.
Oh,
that's really shoving
it. Oh, my God.
How about a Kim Driscoll steal
Anthony
points?
Anthony Weiner.
That is exactly right. Now, Anthony Weiner, speaking of you two mayors, the rumor is that Anthony Weiner is trying to make a comeback to run for mayor of New York City.
Now, I want to ask you, Mayor Driscoll, as a female and a politician, do you think this guy can make a comeback?
If you can do it anywhere, you can do it in New York. That strikes me as the comeback city. But I think it's tough.
Oh, the ridicule. Really tough. Can you imagine the ridicule when he runs? Yeah. What do you think? What do you think, Mayor Curtatone?
Yeah, I know. I live in Somerville, and sort of anything goes, but I don't think that that wouldn't go in Somerville.
Yeah.
By the way, I will say this. Since we know Democratic mayors never look at the Drudge Report, the headline under Wiener's picture yesterday was, Wiener rises again.
But we'll
just
go, okay,
now fine. Now,
you two. We got a neat thing because of the fact that you are from Salem and you, of course, Mayor Curtatone, are from Somerville.
Yep.
We've got questions now that are unique to your towns, but we're going to mix it up a little bit by asking Mayor Driscoll the questions about Somerville and Mayor Curtatone the questions about
no
Salem.
No hints, Mayor Curtatone and Mayor Driscoll and vice versa.
I believe it's first to Mayor Driscoll.
Yes, it is.
Okay. What annual festival celebrates Somerville's most famous product?
It's got to be the Fluff Festival.
Oh, my goodness.
That's very good.
It's
close enough. The What the Fluff Festival, but that's very good.
We should say what the history is, though. A lot
Somerville
of people don't
resident
know.
Somerville Archibald Query invented fluff, so everything we're asking you is about this spreadable marshmallow concoction. You know, I didn't even know. Well, I can't say this because it will give away one of the other questions, but I didn't even know Somerville was the home of marshmallow fluff until a couple of years ago.
Do you guys know how that festival came about?
No.
Do you remember former state senator Jared Barrios?
Yeah.
Is this a quiz question?
Well, it was, but we can skip that one. It's okay. Go ahead. It's all right.
I want a point for that then.
You can say it. No, say it.
Jared
Barrios. Tell the story.
No, I can tell you why it happened, but the story behind it could be a quiz question.
Okay,
the story behind it is a very good question.
Okay,
I remember this.
You keep going with the lightning round on Somerville for Mayor Driscoll.
Okay,
go ahead.
Okay. Here, Mayor Driscoll.
Okay.
Can you name the existing flavors of fluff?
Marshmallow and strawberry.
Yeah, there's one more.
There's one more.
Yep.
Maple walnut.
She gets two out of three. Do you know what the third flavor is? Let me tell you, you're not going to have a sixth term if you don't know this. Raspberry,
Come on. We're traditionalists in Somerville. It's all about basic fluff.
Right. Purist.
Yeah.
Purist.
I don't think you want to have well, maybe you would. Raspberry and peanut butter fluff. That might be a pretty good sandwich. Yeah. Okay, Jared Barrios.
Jared Barrios
revealed that he was the answer to this question. So we're going to ask you what it was about. He proposed an amendment to restrict the servings of marshmallow fluff sandwiches in schools. Do you know why he did this?
Sugar, wellness, healthy food. I have no idea. No.
Is that the answer?
I have no idea either.
We don't know either. Let's move to the next question.
Yeah.
Is that what it was?
No, his sons were served fluff during lunch.
That's right.
In Somerville, since he was our senator, it riled people up. And we said, we're going to have the What the Fluff Festival. What the Fluff,
right.
Jared.
That's
and
in
that's
response
what
to that. That's pretty great.
And Jared, he didn't even show up to the first festival. I know.
Then he resigned from the Senate. That's what happened.
You know something? For 3 years in junior high school, every day I had a Fluffernutter sandwich on Sunbeam bread and Twinkies for dessert.
Are you bragging about this?
Talk about a healthy lunch. No, it was terrible. It was terrible.
Okay, one more fluff.
You're going to be at the next festival, Mike.
Yeah, that's right.
One more fluff question for Mayor Driscoll.
Okay. What was the incident locally referred to as the Great 2006 Kerfuffle? If you need a hint, we'll play you a clip for it. You want the clip?
Can I phone a friend?
Okay.
I definitely need the hint.
Here's a Fluffernutter clip.
I love this song.
To make a Fluffernutter, marshmallow fluff, and lots of peanut butter.
It's about enough, don't you think?
Okay, this is a tough one.
Yes.
What is it?
You don't know the answer.
I do not know.
Do you know the answer, Mayor?
No, I don't.
In 2006, State Representative Kathy Ann Ronstein filed a bill, to make the Fluffernutter the official sandwich of Massachusetts.
She's
tragically. She failed.
Okay, now it's your turn. These are questions about Salem for Mayor Curtatone, who happens to be the mayor of Somerville. Question one, what 17th century series of judicial events put Mayor Driscoll's city on the map? What would they be, please?
The Salem witch trials.
That would be exactly correct. We got a little beep. Thank you very much. The next one, it's been charged that the CIA uses waterboarding as an interrogation technique. What form of special interrogation did Salem officials use on suspected witches? What's the answer to that, please?
I think they burned witches at the stake, didn't they?
That's not...
Oh, that was the penalty.
That's not quite. So what's the... you don't know the interrogation technique.
It was the rack.
Now, do you know what the answer is, Kim Driscoll?
Are we talking about Giles Corey, who was crushed to death? And we didn't really burn anybody, but...
That is exactly right.
Now, Salem is a native city, I've got to tell you.
Giles Corey, September 19, 1692. It's called Pain... Fort et dur, I guess. It's in English. It means placing heavy stones on a person's chest, making it hard to...
Horrible.
You don't do any of that anymore,
We
correct?
Weren't so good to people in 1692.
It was Dick Cheney from Salem. That's all I want to know.
Okay, let's go to the final question on Salem, if we can. Judges back there. Mm-hmm. Please name the title of this song. Here it is. It's coming up in a second. I skipped ahead. I'm going to give you a hint because you live one town over from me. The non-instrumental version was made famous by a guy named Frank Sinatra. Does that help you out at all? You heard of him, right?
Witchcraft.
That is exactly right.
Very
nicely
good.
Done. Before we get back to the quiz, for both of you, Joe Curtatone, I turned on CBS News National the other night, and you're on there talking about the gun thing. And I think the central theme there was something we've talked a lot about on this show, is the patchwork nature of state laws on guns. For example, we live in a state with one of the toughest laws now, not as tough as Connecticut or New York, which are brand new, obviously expanded. But New Hampshire has some of the weakest laws. You've seen some real painful consequences in your city, have you not?
Right. As recent as 2010, we had one of our officers, Mario Oliveira, was shot six times point-blank range, investigating in conjunction with the ATF the trafficking of guns from New Hampshire and Maine. And now I was making the point in CBS, we have one of the toughest gun laws amongst all the states in the country. But when a third of our crimes are the result of guns being used at a traffic den from New Hampshire, Maine, not including the guns that come from Georgia, North Carolina, Florida, California, that's a big problem. You know, gun crimes have gone up despite our tough laws in Massachusetts. And that's, I talk about a bureaucratic process, political process in Washington and Beacon Hill, what real life consequences for cities and towns. We're trying to keep our streets safe. And the proliferation of weapons and ammunition has made that job tough.
So Mayor Driscoll, when you know that the likelihood of Congress doing anything more than this limited expansion of background checks, and I think that clearly will be the most that's going to come out of this Congress, do you say to your reps and senators on Beacon Hill, do what you can despite this New Hampshire-Maine border problem? Or do you say we got to keep fighting just on the federal level? What's the answer?
Unfortunately, you have to do both. I mean, I think we want to have strong laws here that protect neighborhoods, preserve constitutional rights, but it's never going to be enough until we do something in Washington federally to recognize that we just should be embarrassed. We can't allow this to continue.
Yeah, but you know what drives me nuts about this? While Democrats have gone out of their way, and I thought correctly to a point, to criticize Republicans for being obstructionists. Did you see the Globe story yesterday? In the three northern New England states, Maine, Vermont, and New Hampshire, Jeanne Shaheen, not one of the six senators, by the way, has committed to an assault weapons ban. Jeanne Shaheen, Democrat. Patrick Leahy, liberal Democrat from Vermont. Angus King, independent, who has Democratic leanings. I think he's in the Democratic caucus. How can they justify being against an assault weapons ban when you're in essentially this part of the country?
I don't understand it. I don't live in that place that this is so hard. I just don't. I mean, can't fathom why it's a difficult thing to have background checks to prevent not only folks with mental illness and criminal backgrounds, but as we've now found out, folks trying to hurt our country. You know, these Al-Qaeda tapes coming along. Like, why? This just doesn't seem that hard. There are lots of hard things. This one seems like a simple solution.
And I saw that clip last night on TV, the Al-Qaeda guy talking about coming to the gun
show. That would have been my show, by the way.
Was it your show?
That was where you saw that,
Marty. It was a brilliant clip, Jim.
The fact that more than 3,000 people have been killed by the result of gun violence since Newtown, and 33,000 people a year die as a result of gun violence, that should shock our consciousness. Military assault weapons are meant to kill massive amounts of people. I mean, you're not getting into a gunfight with a deer. We've never banned one hunting rifle or gun ever in this country's history.
One last thing before we get back to the questions. You're the president. What is the association?
The Mass Mayors Association. Last year, just ended in January.
That's correct. Right. So a lot of talk about you running statewide. Do you want to have anything to tell us?
I'm running for re-election in Salem. We have an election year here. It's a great job. It's a great community. Lots of things are going on. At some point, you'd like to think, are what you're doing locally in your own community, does it lend itself to something else?
So the answer is you're thinking about it.
Well, I think that I don't want to foreclose any future opportunities.
One of our producers said we should put stones on your chest until you answer the question. Thank you, Chelsea, for that advice.
Okay.
You've thought about some other kinds of things from time to time. I know you love your job. Don't have to say this. I love being mayor. But you have too, haven't you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's the best job in the world. And anybody will tell you, no matter what political office you hold, you'll always go back to thinking about your job because it's the most meaningful work you can do. But I'm flattered, but I'm sure like Kim gets the amount of calls and
also,
thoughts about,
there's
hey,
never been a Somerville mayor who's gone on to higher office.
Right.
We all know that.
But I have an election this year. I'm running for re-election, but I am thinking about it.
Good.
Okay.
Now,
we have a few more questions.
We're going to switch, by the way, because you've been too easy on Mayor Driscoll. I'm going to start asking her tougher questions.
All right, Jim, go ahead.
Mayor, who is Jimmy Fallon weighing the pros and the cons of? Listen up.
Pro, his people adore him. Con, or else. Fair enough.
Fair enough.
Pro, he's got a soft side. Con, it's called his body. A little plump. Pro, he gets to follow in the footsteps of his all-powerful father. Con, everyone at work still calls him Lil' Kim.
Okay, who is Jimmy Fallon talking about? Please,
so,
Mayor
Pro, he gets to invite Dennis Rodman to watch a game with him.
Was that one of the most surreal things of all time?
Really weird.
He loves him.
Yeah.
So who is the guy?
It's Kim Il-sung. Is that Kim Il-jong?
It's Rob
Kim.
Dolan.
It's close enough. Kim Jong-un. We'll
All
give
right,
you the points because we're in a very good mood today.
Okay, Mayor Caratoni, here's one. I hope you're a TV watcher.
Oh, my God.
Which TV show premiered earlier this week? I'm going to play a little sound from it.
I came here because I'm looking for someone that I do want. I did not throw her away.
Yeah, you're a goodie. I can tell. Well, Miss Elizabeth Hofstadt Francis of Rye, New York. Eyes blue, hair bottled. We don't like your life any more than you do.
You have bad manners. You deserve to live in the street of this pigsty. And I hope you get tetanus or crabs or whatever else is crawling around here.
Any idea what show
I'll guess
that
Salem
was?
Cable Access Television. Oh! I don't watch TV.
Oh, so that's how it's going to be.
Do you have any idea?
I have no idea. I'm proud to say I have no idea.
Wait, but, you don't watch television either?
You know, you really can't be committed to it. Everything happens at night in local government, public hearings, school committee meetings.
By the way, let me just give you a fabulous show on NECN 6 o'clock every night. No, I'm serious. You might learn something, but that's up to you. What's the answer?
I spent 2 hours watching this show, and I kind of wished I hadn't. Mad Men, the premiere of Mad Men.
Okay, now here's the deal. With one question to go very quickly, only 2 minutes, Driscoll, as in Mayor Driscoll of Salem, is 1 point ahead of Caratoni, otherwise known as Mayor Caratoni of Somerville. So you're going to do, we're going to give you the last question in an attempt to even this up so you don't leave here with bad feeling and all that sort of stuff.
We're happy here.
Go ahead, Marjorie, ask the final question to Mayor Caratoni, and let's hope he can bail this thing out.
Okay. We're going to play you Meryl Streep, a little clip of Meryl Streep acting, of course, and then ask you who she's playing. Here's the clip.
If the right honorable gentleman could perhaps attend more closely to what I am saying, rather than how I am saying it, he may receive a valuable education in spite of himself.
She's playing the Iron Lady, Margaret Thatcher.
Whoa.
Very good. I know. Did you see that movie? I haven't seen that movie.
I have not.
People said it wasn't that good of a movie.
They don't watch television. They don't go to the movies.
Well, you can understand how tough it is for Mayor Menino to give up being the mayor of Boston after 20 years. I mean,
amazing.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
Does Menino Bigfoot you guys? You tell the truth when you say, does Menino Bigfoot the mayors of the lower, how many mayors are there? 27, 31?
46.
Does he Bigfoot the lower 45?
No, I really consider him a friend. He's a great ally in terms of a lot of the issues that we're facing at the municipal level and kind of that standard bearer. The programs he's doing at his level, we're all usually trying to emulate to the extent that they work in our communities as well.
Same with you, Joe.
Yeah, he was a good friend to all of us and always cared about how we were doing in our cities and towns. Was a strong regionalist and partnered with us on many efforts on statewide issues.
Hey, Joe Caratoni, mayor of my neighboring community of Somerville. Love Somerville, by the way. I'm pretty fond of Sam Peabody Essex, greatest museum.
Anywhere. Oh, the whole downtown
Mayor Driscoll,
is beautiful.
Great to see you. We want to thank everybody.
And Davis Square in Somerville looks great.
Union Square is not so bad either. Great to all that. In any case, great to see you both, mayors. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening
to another edition of, actually another week of Boston Public Radio. Find us on the web at WGBHnews.org. We want to thank our team. We've been remiss in this regard. Chelsea Mers, Edgar B. Herwick III, Will Roselep, I think he's the first, Abby Ruzica, and who else, Marjorie?
Alan Mattis and John Parker.
Thank you
all.
We
would be in very bad shape without you.
We surely would. And we'll preview on Monday, next week in politics, with the Globe State House Bureau Chief Frank Phillips and the first woman to be elected to statewide office in her own right, that's Shannon O'Brien. Then at 1 o'clock on open mic, it'll be Reverend Eugene Rivers. Have a wonderful weekend. Thanks for spending part of the week with us. I am Jim Browdy.
I am Marjorie Egan.
We'll see you on Monday at noon. Bye.